Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to yet another exciting episode of the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting from New Zealand, the fabulous fluoridated capital of Auckland is what I choose to call home. On the Fukushima irradiated coastlines, where everybody has a part-time job as an incandescent light bulb and you can't see the stars at night, not because of the fog, but because of the light pollution, because everybody glows in the motherfucking dark. Okay, and my very special guest today is Lorien Fendon, who's a super soldier, experienced person, and I'll let her introduce herself. Lorien, welcome to the program.
Oh, Vinny, thanks so much for having me on today. And, you know, I don't think I'm an actual super soldier, because if you get into the definition of super soldier, I don't quite cut the mustard because I wasn't in the military and I wasn't used in any program where they enhance my bone structure or put nanites in me or use me for any kind of black ops or did anything like that that I know of.
Well, okay? I said super soldier experience.
I am. I'm a super soldier experienced ringleader. That's what I am.
Yeah, I mean, that'd actually be great, like a great music concert, the super soldier experience.
Well, you know, we had the super soldier experience, and that is the super soldier summits that I've been putting on for the last 2 years since my experience that led me down the path of trying to help the super soldiers. And eventually it turned into I'm not just helping the quote unquote super soldiers. I'm actually helping the people that are under these mind control programs.
Any relationship to the Magical Mystery Tour?
I wish it was. You know, the last one felt like that. And as I tell the audience about my story today, they're going to find out that it really was a magical mystery tour I was on. It was quite wild. And if you don't mind, Vinny, I'm just going to cut to the chase and get right to it and tell everybody how I happened to have my experience with the super soldiers and when it turned into me getting mad enough that I said, I'm going to expose these people. I'm going to put on a conference and I'm going to get them all together and expose the dark cabal that is the people, you know, in charge somewhere between the military, the Illuminati, and who knows what else, probably an alien faction as well, maybe even the Nazis, and definitely the people who do the satanic ritual abuse to their children. They're all involved in this. It's a very big pie. When I first got into it, I thought it was just, oh, quote unquote, the super soldiers. And then, boy, man, after I jumped into that rabbit hole, I learned a whole bunch. But what I'd like to do right now is just start with how it all happened to me so the world gets to know who I am, what I'm about, and why I do what I do. And then hopefully in the second hour, if they all show up, I'm going to have Aaron Hicks with us. Aaron Green Hicks will be in the second hour, and James Rink will be with us in the third hour. And we'll just banter about the whole, you know, Super Soldier Summits and how they were involved and just have a good old round
table. We could tell stories. This one time at Super Soldier Camp.
You know what? I wish it was a fun time at Super Soldier Camp, but I'll tell you about that a little later. So anyhow, what happened to me was in September of 2011, I was, I better go back just a little notch here because I need to explain how I ended up at that conference. It was the Awaken Aware Conference, September 2011, I think it was the 22nd and 23rd. But getting to that conference, earlier in May, I had taken on a speaker, author type person that's my job in real life, folks, is I manage speakers, authors, and TV personalities and people who are in the UFO community and, you know, people write about Bigfoot and, you know, you name it, I help manage those people and get their books out there and get them speaking engagements. So I was on my way to go down to this Awaken Aware conference that Project Camelot was putting on to promote four of the people I was representing at the time. Back in May, before that September, that fall, I was on the phone with one of the women that I was representing, and I was talking to her, and suddenly, without noise and without warning, a black helicopter came over my house and hovered and circled for about 3 to 4 minutes. And it was very loud, very disconcerting because I was talking to her on the phone and she could hear it. I mean, that's how loud this thing was. And she's in Hawaii and she can hear this thing over the phone loud as day. And I sent my roommate out to see what color it was because I couldn't see it. All I could do is hear it. And he went out there and said, yes, there's definitely a very low. He could even see the guy sitting in the on the side of the by the navigator, but in the doorway. He could see a guy sitting in the doorway there with his legs hanging out. So, and it was a black helicopter, some guy sitting there with his legs hanging out, and they're circling my house at about maybe 150 feet above it. And it's so loud, I could barely talk on the phone, and I didn't hear it coming. And that was the weirdest part because I was like, suddenly they were there. And I said to her, I said, do you hear that? She said, yeah. And I sent him out. He said, yeah, it's out there. It's a black helicopter. Can't believe the guy's not falling on the house. And a couple minutes later, they slowly took off, and I could hear them leaving. So I thought that was very interesting. I had just made my mind up that day, pretty much during that phone call with her, that I was going to start putting on some more radical conferences. I wasn't sure what they were yet. I wasn't sure how I was going to do it. I was just producing UFOCon in San Francisco at the time, also besides managing speakers and authors. And I thought maybe I'd do some other things as well. So that's...
Is that one of those moments where it's like...
Yeah, it was worse than that, Vinny, because I didn't correlate it at the time. But later, and you'll hear what happened later on, then it all made sense as to why it showed up at that point, because I had made that decision. But it didn't dawn on me then what it was all about, why they were there, and what they were doing. Okay, so now fast forward now to September, and I actually end up at that conference with the woman that I'm on the phone with in Hawaii that I'm representing. She met me in LA. We went to Anaheim. We're staying at a house. We go down to Orange County for the conference. It's Friday. We set up our table because I have a table out in the lobby as a vendor, and Carrie was kind enough to, you know, give me a table because she wanted to talk to me about some of the people that I was representing. So she said, yeah, bring your stuff down, you know, promote them, and we'll talk. And so it was great. So I get down there, and it's Friday night. Duncan O'Finian is on stage with his girlfriend, Miranda, and she goes by the nickname of Axe. So this is the first time she's ever speaking. Acellaria Liberalis is the woman that I'm representing. She's sitting next to me in the audience. We're listening to them talk, yak, yak, yak. I'm here. I've heard Duncan quite a few times by this point, and I was pretty impressed with the Super Soldier, the whole experience and what these guys have gone through. And I was thinking to myself, geez, maybe I should put on a conference for them. God, in hindsight, I wish I had never had that thought, but that's what I'm thinking. It's Friday night, and I think, God, I wonder why no one else has ever done it for them, you know, because there are quite a few of them, and I wonder what's going on with that. I think I'll do that. So while I'm listening to this presentation, Miranda says, oh, yeah, and there's this thing, I hear a voice screaming in my head all the time in the back of my head. It's not in the forefront. It's always there in the back. And I look around the room, and I'm looking, and nobody else is reacting. And I'm going, that's odd, because a few years earlier, I had noticed that for 20-some-odd years, or a few years earlier, I had gotten rid of the screaming in the back of my head, and had it been there for 20 years. So I was like, oh my God, that has been happening to me most of my life. And because in my 20s, I started meditating, and I was always hearing the screaming in the back of my head, and I thought, oh my God, this is really weird. I don't want to know about it. And I pretty much, during the day, it would not be a problem. I would never hear it, blah, blah, blah. And then I'd fall asleep, and just at that point where you're falling asleep, I would always hear it. And I'm waking up in the morning, and I would hear it. And I always thought to myself, well, that's odd. It must be some kind of psychological thing that happened to me as a kid that I don't remember. Maybe it was when I was getting my tonsils out. Maybe, you know, maybe it's when I was a kid and I ate rat poisoning and I was in the hospital. Maybe it's just some kind of leftover residual psychic scar, you know, psychological scar. So I'm thinking, okay, that's got to be it. So I never paid much attention to it until that moment in 2011, sitting in the audience going, huh, I wonder if that has something to do with what was happening to me. Now, I have to also specify that I had stopped hearing that voice a couple years before this event happened, when she was talking about the voice in the head screaming. And I don't know why it stopped. It just stopped. And I'm very grateful that I don't ever hear it anymore. And it's just wonderful. But anyhow, so I said to my friend, I said, ooh, you know, that's really odd. Have you ever had a screaming in the back of your head? Your voice in the back of your skull screaming? She said, oh, no, I've never had anything like that. So I'm thinking, oh, God, I wonder how weird that is. So and then it's over. And she says to me, oh, I really want to talk to them. They have some answers to something that I know that they can help me with what I'm doing, my research. And I said, I don't really want to talk to them right now. So by the time the speech was over, I'd gone from, oh, I really want to help these guys, to I'm not sure I ever want to talk to them again or to them ever. And she's like, oh, we have to talk to them. I said, no, no, no. So I said, let's get out of here. So it was the end of the evening, and I just basically snuck us out of the place and got us out of there before we ran into anybody. And it was great. Went home Friday, no problems. Went back Saturday and listened to a full day of people talking. And she kept coming back to the table going, you know, I really want to talk to Duncan and Miranda. And they were really busy all day and she could never get to him. And she said, you know, we've really got to talk to him. And by that time, I had time to sleep on it. I was thinking about it. And I thought, you know what, maybe I will do a conference for these guys. So I found Aaron McCullen that day. And I went up to him and his wife and their beautiful dog. I love their dog. And said to them, hey, you guys, why are you not on stage, you know, at this event? And he goes, well, Duncan and I aren't getting along right now. And Duncan was the first person Carrie asked. So he's on stage this weekend and we'll do another one, another event some other time. And I said, well, if I put on a conference for you guys, do you think that you and Duncan would get along well enough to be able to at least be on stage together or on stage at separate times and be okay? And he said, yeah, yeah, I'd be fine with that. And I said, great. Well, and it kind of sparked me and I thought, well, maybe I should do a conference for these guys. No one else seems to be picking up the mantle. Maybe I'll do it. So I told them to that effect. I said, let me gather up other people and see if I can do something, and we'll talk more. So that day goes by, and it's the end of the night, and I'm still having a queasy feeling about talking to Duncan and Miranda, even though I know I have to at some point. And Ace Laurie again says, we've got to go talk to him. We've got to find him. And I said, nah, let's do it tomorrow before we leave. So I pack up our stuff and I'm running out the door. And again, I'm trying to sneak out of the place. And we go around the corner of the building away from everybody. And lo and behold, who's standing right there smoking cigarettes by the trash can is Duncan and Miranda. So we run right into him. So we start talking. And I basically said to Axe, I said, look, I've had screaming in the back of my head for many years. Do you think I should pursue, you know, figure out what it was? She looked at me, and I'll never forget this, Vinny. It was the weirdest sensation. She looked at me and she said, Lorian, maybe you don't want to know about it. And I looked at her and I said, you know, you're right. I don't want to know. And then we proceeded to talk about the conference. If I put one on, would they want to do it? And they said, yes, blah, blah. And I left and I was kind of like, this is very interesting. Now, this is where it gets really spooky for me. So we get back to our house in Anaheim. We have dinner. Things are fine. It's about 2 o'clock in the morning. And I think it was about three. Ace Laurie and I had been up talking all night and she finally went to bed. I walked into my room and I sat down, on the edge of the bed, and I went to open my laptop on a little table by the side of the bed. And I'm thinking to myself, Vinny, I'm thinking, I wonder if Ace Laurie remembers the day that we were on the phone and the helicopter came over the house. And the minute I thought that, now, you know, it wasn't that long of a thought. It's an instantaneous thought, and it's not a sentence. It's more of a, like, you know, imprint that you think, right? And I think it, and instantaneously, Vinny, there is a helicopter over the house. just like there was in my house that day back in May. And I am now I'm paralyzed. I'm sitting on the edge of the bed. Now, I did not hear it get there, just like the first one. And it's loud. And now that I think about it, I've had a lot of time to think about the reaction of the neighborhood. In my mind, I was thinking that everybody else was waking up because I saw some lights going on. Oh, excuse me for just a second. I need to cough here. Hold on.
And make sure you turn your head when you do it.
Oh, yeah.
Well, it's just your friend at TSA agent speaking.
You know, this is funny because every time I try to talk about this, my throat gets constricted. It's very weird. I don't think they want me talking about it. So
I think it's fear.
Yeah, it could be. It could be just me reacting. I don't know. But anyhow, so
well, it brings scary thoughts to mind, does it not?
Well, yeah, wait to hear the rest of it. I mean, it just gets crazier. So I'm sitting on the side of the bed. This helicopter is over the house. It's really loud. It's really low. Never heard it coming. And I decide to stand up and look out the window at it. Okay, so I'm kind of in the center of the room, paralyzed. I've got two windows, one to the left up high that I can't see anything out of except for some lights I think are turning on and off in the neighborhood. And then I walk to the lower window right in front of me, and I look out, and I don't see a helicopter. What I see are, in a triangle shape, pretty high up, but not so high that they aren't pretty big inside. I'd say thumbnail size if I put my thumb out. Three red, ember red glowing lights in a triangle shape. And it's very dark, and I can't make out if it's a triangle spacecraft or not. But it's not a helicopter, and it's stationary, and it's not moving. So this is the weird part. Now, my brain now is going, wait, where's the helicopter? I'm seeing three lights. They're not moving. They're in a triangle shape, which tells me it's a spacecraft. And then my brain just kind of shuts down, and I back away from the window. And I'm standing in the center of the room listening to this helicopter, knowing there's no helicopter really, but there's something else out there. And I don't know what's going on. And then just as quick as it came, and then maybe this was about a minute, minute and a half into it, it flies away. And then I go back to the window, and the three red lights are gone. So I'm like, okay, this is just the weirdest thing. I wonder if anybody else has been paying attention to this. So go to bed, get up in a few hours. I ask everybody in the house, hey, did you guys all hear that helicopter last night? And everybody said, nah, we didn't hear anything. So this is where I'm starting to wonder. I mean, it's been a few years now, and I'm starting to wonder if this, and now that I know much more about mind control and what the government's doing to people and how they manipulate people and they program them, I'm beginning to wonder if they just didn't fly a triangle-shaped helicopter over the place and send the thought to me that there was the helicopter there. And it wasn't really a helicopter at all like it was the first time. So this is what's going through my head now, several years later. So I just thought I'd share that with your audience because for the first 2 years up until about a few months ago, I was thinking it was truly a helicopter and a spacecraft. Then I thought it was just a spacecraft making the noise. And now I'm wondering if the noise was even there for anybody else to audibly hear. So I'm taking it all, you know, many levels on this. So people understand how complex this really is getting.
Well, in essence, that's why it's so confusing. And things that are confusing that you can't make sense of can be quite stressful.
Yeah. I mean, they really do freak you out. I mean, it's like, and believe me, once it happens to you, you never forget it. You spend the rest of your life trying to analyze it and find an answer. And, you know, Vinny, I got to say, I'm one of the lucky people that is being, you know, bothered by these programming things because I usually don't have any other problems. I don't have any stress. I don't have anything going on. And I don't obsess over them. Like, if I never find out what that was over the house, I'm fine. I don't care. You know, I'm emotionally stable. People probably think I'm nuts. Loony as a tune right now. But to be honest with you guys, I'm pretty dang concrete, grounded person. So for me to just say, okay, I'll let it go, that's, that in this community, that's a sign of somebody who doesn't get controlled by them very much, because I don't know if you've interviewed a lot of these people, but they get to the point where they get obsessed and all they want to know is why me, you know, what was that, you know, and they incessantly bother people about what's going on with them, and they become, you know, very much on the edge. They certainly need some anxiety medication after a while, and they end up, and I hate to say this, this is really a bad thing to say, but they usually end up in their parents' basement and never go out again, you know, in their entire life. And it's very tough and it's hard on them, but you know, the best thing you can do if you're involved in this, and this is for anybody out there listening, if you've had a mind control situation where something's happened to you that's pretty much unexplainable, the best thing to do is let it go and don't worry about it. Unless it's threatening your life or something horrible is going to happen to you, or, you know, if your dog's getting killed, or, you know, I mean, it's got to be something very violent and awful for me to react like that. For something odd and strange to happen to you like that, you've got to let it go. You can't become obsessed and ask every other, you know, Tom, Dick, and Harry for an answer, because no one's got it.
Well, it causes depression and anxiety. It's like Lao Tzu in China. He said, if you're thinking only of the future, you live in anxiety. If you're thinking only of the past, you're living in depression. If you're thinking only of the now, you're living in peace.
Exactly. That's exactly it. And luckily enough, I've hit that point with everything that's happened to me in my life. And but I'm old. I got to say, I am 56 years old. So this happened to me very late in life. So maybe I'm a lot more grounded than the younger people that it happens to. And I can kind of understand their obsession with it because, you know, they haven't lived enough to say, hey, you know, it doesn't matter. Your life is your life and you're in control. And that's the most important thing people have to.
But did you have parents satanically abuse you?
No, nothing like that. I grew up normal, just a normal kid in Southwest Portland, Oregon. My father was a land developer. My mom was a homemaker. You know, just very normal life, except for the Catholic indoctrination. I went to a Catholic grade school, so, you know, I did get a lot of that. But, you know, I had a normal existence. Anyhow, I was chosen for this, Vinny. I think somewhere along the line they said, let's let her be the one that gets to bring these guys all together for some reason. So,
I disagree with those kind of fatalistic predeterminations. What I think is that people take actions in their life and they choose to see them through rather than thinking that it's not worth it. And it's usually not because they're wanting something for themselves. It's because they have a moral obligation to do something for other people that only they can do.
And there you go. Maybe that's what happened to me. The minute I decided to do that conference back in May when the first helicopter came over, or not a conference, but any kind of thing I could do to help these guys or anybody that needed it, then maybe that was the moment that this all, you know, became solid for me, that I had to do it. And I think you're right about that. Hmm. I think it's important that people understand that, you know, if you say, I'm going to help, if you tell the cosmos, I'm going to help somebody somewhere, somehow, and serve them, then there you go. You got to do it, I guess. And if you don't do it, who knows what will happen to you?
You usually become depressed alcoholics.
Well, that's true.
I've seen this with so many people. Like, I remember I had a school chum in high school, and he was brilliant. Like had intelligence brains up to wazoo. But all he did all the time was just get wasted and try to deny how brilliant he was. And as a result, he's now living a life of no consequence.
Oh, that's too bad. See? That's what I think. Everybody's got to get brave and help other people at some point in their life. I think it's very important. You know, it's the old service to self, service to others thing. I really think that's very important on this planet, especially now. We got a lot of problems here. But anyhow, if you don't mind, I'm going to continue my story so we can get through it in the next the rest of the hour. So that really, that evening, I got to say, was probably the pinnacle point of my whole life changing in an instant, because that's when I realized that whoever they are, they can be in anybody's head in any moment at any time, and when they have a thought, they can do a thought or an action right back at you if you're on the radar. And that really blew my mind. I mean, it took me a few months to wrap my head around that one. And but anyhow, there's more to the story, so and then you'll understand why it took me a few months to wrap my head around it. So we go back to the conference. It's the last day. It's Sunday. And I needed to speak with Bill Ryan about one of my people that I was representing. So I'm seeking him out. It's later in the afternoon. I think Sean David Morton had just spoke. And Bill was sitting near the front. And I walked up to him, and he had this young kid kneeling down with him in front of him with this cube, and they were both meditating over this cube. And so I got very involved in what they were doing, and I'm watching, and I'm kind of like zoning out over this cube thing. And the kid gets done talking to Bill, and they had a great time, and he gave him the cube and thanked him for his time. And then he jumped up and he looked at me, and he says, "Hey, I'm a super soldier." And I went, "Oh, okay." He goes, "I heard you're doing something for us." I said, "Oh, I am? Okay." I said, "Meet me at my table later and we'll talk." And he goes, "Okay, great." And he says, "Oh, by the way, my name's James Rank." And I said, "Okay, wonderful." So Bill Ryan and I spoke, and then the whole day's winding down. I ended up back at the table, and I had forgotten that I told James to come over to the table. But just as we were packing up the last of our items, two guys came by the table, and I'm looking down, and Ace Ilaria looks up and says hi to James. And I look up at his companion, and the first words out of my mouth are, "My God, I know you." And my whole body just went into this whole, like, total recognition of this person. Like, I'd known him forever, and it was the strangest form of deja vu I've ever had in my entire life, and way beyond like my first husband. When I met him, I knew I had been with him in a previous lifetime, and I just kind of knew that, and I knew the story a little bit, but it took me years to figure it all out. But this guy, it was like 20 times more powerful, and I was really blown away, because it was at the same time I was reconnecting with him, I was also deathly afraid to be around him, and I couldn't quite figure out what was going on, and I was kind of freaked out, but I acted like everything was fine. And he introduced himself, and he says, "Hi, I'm Max Spears." And I said, "Oh, well, okay, great to know you." I said, "Do you remember me from anywhere? Have we met?" And he goes, "No, not that I know of." But he goes, you look familiar in a weird way." And I said, "Yeah, okay, cool." And I just let it go. And then we spend another couple hours with them. And then we decide to go back to the house for dinner together. So we end up at the place till about 3 o'clock in the morning, had a great dinner. We were talking all about super soldiers. And I promised the two of them that I would put on a conference for, well, at that point, it was James Rank, Max Spears, Aaron McCollum, and Duncan O'Finian, and Axe, Duncan's girlfriend. So I had 5 people already in the conference to speak. So, and he said he knew a couple other people, and I said, "Great, and, you know, it sounds like an interesting time." But I must tell everyone, during that conversation, a lot of Nazi information came out. A lot of satanic stuff came out, and every time Max would start talking about this, I would get sick to my stomach. I could barely eat dinner that night, and I was feeling weirder than I felt, and I can't even describe it. It's the only time I've ever felt like that, and it was just strange. It was like I was sick and happy all at the same time that I found this person that I had lost, but sick at realizing what had happened to me or something. I couldn't even place it. So they leave, and I'm, you know, I never tell them all this while it's happening, of course. I'm just going with the punches and listening to the stories and planning conferences and blah, blah, blah. So I go to bed. It's now 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning. About 8 o'clock in the morning, I start to wake up. And I can only describe this to people as a full-blown recall experience memory that I'm seeing as in a semi-awake dream state. And I can't tell you guys all about it because it's beautiful and loving and horrific and horrible all at the same time. But I was being tortured in one part. I was being there's a lot of sexual stuff going on in other parts. I was being twinned with Max. And the only way I can describe twinning is that they take your souls and they basically melt you together in this euphoric love connection. And I think Eve Lorgan talks about this quite a bit in her books about the alien love bite. Whoever is in charge of these mind control programs or the super soldier programs or whatever they are called, they definitely use that against the people that they're working with. They usually start out by making them fall in love and then they torture them. And the falling in love isn't like a normal falling in love. It's more like a metaphysical, spiritual, chemical falling in love. And since this whole experience happened to me, I have figured out that they use our endocrine system, all of our, you know, hormones and what have you, just like you're playing a fiddle, to make us do their bidding. And I'll go into that much more in detail in the next hour with Aaron. But that's what I figured out. It's taken me 2 years to figure that out. It was kind of in the forefront at the beginning of my experience, but later on it really became the answer to the quest for me figuring out what had happened to me. Anyhow, so I'm not going to bore you guys anymore with the details of what happened, but I will say one more thing about it. In this experience, I'm 17 or 18, and Max is 20 or 22. And we're very young. Now, in this reality, I'm 56 and Max is 36. So, you know, quite a bit of difference there. And and I'm beginning to wonder if there wasn't some time shifting going on when this all happened. And I'm not even sure it happened now and maybe not have happened in another lifetime or didn't happen in the future. Or they just took us whenever we were. Maybe he was in reality, 20 and I was 40 when they made this all happen and made us think we were 17 and 22. I have no idea. But I came out of it. And I was so upset, folks. I mean, I never cry. I mean, I do cry once in a while, but I don't cry like this. I went into a 3.5-hour crying jag over the whole experience because it was love, it was torture, it was happy, it was extremely sad, it was everything horrible and loving all in one, and I've never experienced anything like that. And God forbid anybody have to go through that kind of recall memory, because I'm not, like I said, I'm not sure it was all real. But after I came out of it, and I got my senses together, and I drove Asolari and myself back to San Francisco, where I live, I decided, I was so pissed. After I came out of being mad, being sad and crying, I got so pissed off. I said, there's no way in hell these guys are going to stop me. I'm now putting on that conference. I am going to call it the Super Soldier Summit, and we are going to get to the bottom of how this all happens and occurs. So that pretty much is in a nutshell about what happened to me and how I got involved with this. Since that experience, I have discovered that we're pretty sure, and this is a consensus about this from the 6 or 7 or 8 or 10 people that I'm now involved with in the super soldier mind control arena, they're pretty convinced I was used for some kind of DNA splicing into the super soldier program, that they use my DNA. And one of the reasons they probably use my DNA is I have now discovered, besides being negative blood type and a descendant of the Stewart family and the Pruitts and the Fentons, which are all were major players and minor players back in the day of royalty. I had no idea. I didn't even find this out till about a year ago myself. The fact that since I was a kid, I've been pretty psychic, and they're all thinking that that's probably the reason why. There was one day, and I don't know if any of you know this story. I may have told you about it on the last time I was on, but I don't think so. Did I mention manifesting a bunny rabbit when I was 7 years old?
No, not at all.
Okay. Well, I'm going to quickly tell that story because I think that might have something to do with everything now, because it seems to be in, you know, people tell me that that may be the reason why they were looking at me to put me into this program, is because of my abilities as a child, because I certainly don't have those now. I wish I did. I wouldn't be paying rent. You know, I'd be manifesting money left and right and be in the Caribbean somewhere. But what I did is I went to the state fair with my grandparents and my two younger sisters, and we were at the 4-H. I don't know if they have 4-H down in New Zealand, but it's where the kids, you know, they raise their animals on their farms, and then they all get together at the state fairs and get ribbons for the best animals. Do they do that down there?
Yeah, I think the thing they do, we call them P&A shows, or farm shows and things of that nature. That's kind of what you're talking about, guys with the biggest pumpkins, biggest balls, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. Yeah. At our state fairs, we have, you know, a competition for the 4-H kids about who's, you know, raising the best livestock or, you know, whatever you're doing. So, anyhow, the bunny rabbit I fell in love with, where, you know, we walk into this area, there's like 50 cages of bunny rabbits. I fell in love with this black bunny with floppy ears, and he'd won like first prize, and he belonged to this brother and sister, I remember that, and they let me hold him. I just sat down and held him for like a half hour, and I just fell madly in love with this rabbit. I wanted him so bad. My grandparents came up to me and said, oh, you can't have him, he belongs to them, and you know, he just won a prize, he's got to go home, blah blah blah. So I'm very upset. But instead of crying, I start saying, well, I want a bunny. I'm going to get a bunny, and you guys are going to give me a bunny. I kept just like saying, you know, positive affirmation type of things. I don't know why I did it. I was only 7. But instead of crying and having a fit, I just kept saying, will you get me a rabbit? You know, I just kept bugging them about it. And all the way home in the car. And now you got to remember, this is back in 63 or 64. There are no seat belts. You're not strapped in like, you know, the world is going to fall on you, and you know, you're going to get in a car crash in a minute. That was the days you could lean over the front seat of the big car and talk to your grandparents while they're driving. So I kept saying, will you get me a bunny rabbit? Will you ask Mom and Dad to get me a bunny rabbit? I really want a bunny rabbit. So I sat there and I prayed. I prayed for about the last 4 miles going home. And I sat there with my little hands folded, and I remember thinking, I love that bunny rabbit so much. I wish I could have that bunny rabbit. And I kept thinking that and thinking that. We got to the driveway of the house, and it was a farm road, and you got to go up. We had a big gate in front of it. My grandfather gets out to open the gate, and he opens the gate, and what's sitting there but the exact replica of the bunny I just left, sitting right in the middle of the driveway. And my grandfather... He went pale. He's looking at my grandmother. They're both looking at me. My two sisters are screaming, there's the rabbit. And everybody's all happy. But my grandparents are just like, what? How did this rabbit show up? The same rabbit, same kind of rabbit, same color rabbit in the middle of the driveway. And it's not running away from anybody. So he picks it up and he gets in the car and he hands it to me. He goes, I guess this is yours. And then he looks at my grandmother and says, looks like I'm building that hutch after all. It was quite comical now that I look back on it. So for 3 months, we had the rabbit. My grandfather had to build the hutch, and I was out in the yard playing with it one day, and two kids came up our driveway. They saw me playing with the rabbit, and they said, hey, that's our rabbit. And I said, are you sure? And they go, yeah, we lost it about 3 months ago. And I said, oh, well, yeah, here, go ahead, you can have it back. So I gave it back to them. I had done my rabbit thing. I was quite content. But the moral of the story is that it appeared when I wanted it to and how I wanted it to. And it took me up until I was 53 years old to figure out that people could actually do that kind of thing if you're doing it from a place of pure love and pure, you know, just... It's got to be pure love. I don't even know how to describe it to people, but it's a place where there's no ego involved, there's no need involved, there's no money involved, there's no, you know, it's just a place of pure innocence and love, and you can make things happen. You could also do it when people are very, very sick and you want to help them, and if they're deserving of it, you know, if they lived a good life, and I think they're good people, usually they can accept that kind of love and connection, and it can heal them. I've seen it done before. But that's another whole story for another day. But the whole bunny rabbit thing really has come into play for me as an adult now at 56 years old. Because if I hadn't had that experience then, I would not be able to understand what the evil people out there are trying to do to all these people through this mind control and everything. Not because, folks, anybody can do that. Anybody, what I call anybody, can manifest the bunny. Anybody can do that, and that's what they don't want you to know. They don't want you to know that you're that in that capable spiritually of changing the whole world and changing yourself and changing the life around you, and that we can have anything we need. You know, it's like The Secret. You remember The Secret, Vinny? That movie that came out, and everybody was trying to do it, and they could manifest anything at any time, supposedly? Yeah, that's what I said. Because, you know, the reality to that is it didn't work. Nobody was able to manifest a squat. And it's because they weren't doing it from this.
And that, ladies and gentlemen, is the big secret. That the secret doesn't fucking work.
Exactly. The secret didn't work. And it was because they weren't coming from a place of pure spiritual innocence. And I really believe, you know, if you've seen the movie Taken, with the little girl who
Liam Neeson. I don't know who you are.
Well,
but
oh,
I have a certain set
one.
Of skills, and you're going to die.
Not that one, but that's a good point. No, it's the one I think where the little girl is finally the last descendant of this whole family of abductees, and there is a big commotion where she's in a house and all these UFOs are descending upon the house and fighting with all the evil military guys and everything. And then they realize she's creating it. It's not that there's evil aliens there. She's creating all this because she has the ability to tap into their minds and make them believe that's what's happening around them. See, that's how capable we are. And that's what the evil people don't want you to know that you can do.
Yeah.
And you really have to do it out of a love and a giving and a soulful place. You can't do it out of evil, greed, and horribleness, you know. It just has to be naive almost. Naive and loving. So, anyhow, that's what happened to me. And that's how I found out I was part of this whole, you know, cabal of super soldier stuff going on. But what's interesting about it all is that I'm not one of them. I am maybe the den. They call me the den mother, den mother of the super soldiers. And I just laugh because, you know, they all find me now. It's very weird, Vinny. I'll be sitting here. It's 2 o'clock.
You need to get yourself some Native American headdress to put on before long.
I know. I'm going to have to do something. You know what I want to do? I want to get a commune going, and I want to have wear my robes and walk out in my goddess outfit. Something
yeah.
like that.
You can have like an Elvis impersonator dressed up like a Native American Indian chief going, hoy, 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 hoy.
Oh my God, would that be funny? Anyhow, so, you know, I just don't know what's happened, but they're all coming to me. It's like, oh my God, the phone's ringing off the hook at 2, 3, 4, 5 o'clock in the morning. A lot of people are calling, people I've never met. And I do put my phone number out there for people. Once they get a hold of me through the SuperSoldierSummit.com website, that SuperSoldierSummit.com website, I usually talk to these people. And, you know, I hate to say this, Vinny, but about 80% of the people who get a hold of me are kind of crazy. And I do have to kind of let them go along their merry way, because I realize there are so many people out there that are just a little lost, and they're not being grounded enough to realize that they're causing their own problems in their life. And they truly are fantasizing some of these things that could be happening to them. But there's a small percentage, maybe it's 10, 15, 20% that there are some very extraordinary things happening to them. And they're documented by them, and they are, you know, on video, or they've written them down, or they've got pictures, or they've got friends and family that could corroborate what they're talking about. And these are the people I take seriously, and I usually end up talking to them for at least a year before I even contemplate putting them out on a stage where they can be talked to by an audience about their experiences as a quote-unquote super soldier or a mind control victim or a targeted individual or whatever it is that, you know, category they may fall under. So, and that's what we do at the Super Soldier Summit. We let people who really want to get out there and tell people about their experiences and share them with people so people understand the kind of horrors that they're doing to people. I let them come up on stage for about 20 minutes to a half hour. On Friday and Saturday night, we have just 2 hours of these people telling about their experiences. And it's quite cathartic for them, and it's quite amazing for the audience. I mean, the audience last year was just blown away by the stories that they were told. Just absolutely blown away. It was mind-boggling. And one of the things I do to keep their anonymity to a minimum is I don't put those actual communications on stage out on video. They are never seen on YouTube or anything like that. What I do put out is the expert presentations. So if you want to see last year's Super Soldier Summit 2, you can go to supersoldiersummit.com and check out the on-demand video and check out the 12, 14, 15 experts that presented at the last summit. It's an amazing array of people. I had Duncan, Robert Duncan, Miles Johnston from the UK was over there at our last summit talking about the BASIS series, which is where I think people really need to get an education. Vinny, are you familiar with Miles Johnston?
No, not at all.
Oh,
he's amazing. I'm familiar with Jack Johnson and Miles Davis, but not Miles Johnson.
You know, he kind of looks like a cross between the two of them, but oh my God.
How did I know that?
I don't know. You're reading my mind. See how clever you are? Anyhow, Miles Johnston is an amazing guy. He started the BASIS series out of the UK, and his first super soldier, I guess, was Barry King. And he's just gone on from there. He's had 24 people on or more that are super soldiers just out of the UK area. And it's just quite fascinating. So you should have him on sometime because he'll blow your audience's mind. But anyhow, so those are the kind of people I've had present at the Super Soldier Summit. And it's just really, I mean, I can't tell you folks how amazing it is. You really should go, you know, listen to last year's. And if you can make this year's, it'll be May 30, 31, and June 1st in Las Vegas at the Gold Coast Casino. And all the information is at supersoldiersummit.com. I only have, this is another thing I don't do, I don't have a lot of seats. There's only 100 and maybe 25 to 50 seats at any conference I put on. They're very small. I call them intimate conferences. They're basically there for the people to that are having these kind of mind control or super soldier or whatever things happening to them. I try to make a very affordable conference, and I try to do it in a kind of medium price range hotel. And I make it so that people can show up and share their experiences with the experts there and with each other. And one of the things I tell people, I say, well, if you're meant to be there, you'll be there, because that's how important it is to you. If you're in the programs, you'll find the money and you'll get there, because that's where you need to be to start your healing, maybe. So last year we had about 100 people there. It was a great conference. People got to sit on Saturday night. We have this dinner where people don't get in a big banquet room and they're 500 feet away from the speaker and don't really get to talk to them. What we do is we go to the buffet and everybody gets to sit with the speaker they have questions for about what may be going on in their life. And then the speaker is there to, you know, talk to them over a nice leisurely dinner. And we spend 2 hours doing that. So that's really a lot of fun for everybody. And they've really enjoyed that whole, you know, a dinner with the speaker event that we have on Saturday night. So, you know, we have lots of ways for you to meet people and you know, maybe get some answers that you need. You know, maybe get some spiritual help from a couple people there. We have some very nice and very thorough, I would say, hypnotherapists there that come and they offer their time and talent to help people regress if they need it. And yeah, so it's a good weekend all the way around for anybody that needs that kind of exposure. So
I do think that these are the most important parts of raising international consciousness, more or less, is that you get the people who are already affected in both the most gifted and the most terrible ways together. Because I think it's when you bring out the exceptional people and you get them together that you create something that none of them, no matter how hard they try, could have come up with on their own.
Oh, exactly. You know, everybody that was at the last summit that spoke came up to me afterwards. Carrie Cassidy included, Melinda Leslie, Robert Duncan, Miles Johnston, everybody came up to me. And they said, Lorianne, the information I learned at your conference this year will stay with me for the rest of my life. It was information that I didn't even know was going on, and I didn't know how evil these people are that are actually, you know, perpetrating this upon these people. And I just had no idea they were that powerful. And it really made me, as a speaker, have to step up my game, because now I know that I'm actually in a battle. You know, up until that point, most of them had just thought they were telling people their stories and what they were doing. And then they realized, and we all realized in that moment, you know, we're really at the forefront of battling these people and getting the word out to the world that this is, and we should not let this be going on anymore. And people need to be aware of it. Instead of laughing at people that, you know, think they hear voices in their head and saying you're psychotic and sending them to a psychiatric hospital, well, you know, maybe 90% of the time that they might need it and that might help them and they may have some real serious psychological issues. But 10% of the time, I'll bet you anything, they're being bombarded by these EMF frequencies that they're doing, these voice-to-skull communications, or scopolamining them where they don't remember anything for 2 weeks out of their life, like I believe the Aurora shooter in Colorado was done to. I believe there was a faction of the dark super soldiers that were actually the shooters in that theater. And, you know, it's funny. People are so blind. I don't know. Did you follow that very much, Vinny? That whole Colorado shooting?
Not really.
Did you see outside of the theater where there was a blood splatter that was it went along the side of the theater all the way to the back of the theater, and it was...
I never saw any images or read any specific articles or anything like that. I just seen, you know, pictures of the shooter that looks like he's been drugged up hugely. And
Yeah. And the fact that his father was involved with the LIBOR scandal in Europe. He was one of the programmers for that whole banking scandal. Did you know that?
No.
Yeah. Oh, and it gets weirder. One of the guys that was, was it the Boston bombing or the Sandy Hook? But I can't remember now. Oh, yeah, it was Lanza, the kid who was supposedly the shooter at Sandy Hook. His father or mother was supposedly involved in the LIBOR scandal as well in Europe. So, you know, there's two shootings with two people that are involved as programmers or, you know, CEOs of corporations that are involved with the whole LIBOR thing. I thought that was very coincidental. You know, nothing happens by chance when you get to that powerful level of money transactions. I hope people realize that. And, you know, if you
especially if somebody can make something off it.
Oh, yeah. We're talking billions were at stake with that whole LIBOR scandal. So, you know, when they set people up and they aren't playing ball the way they want them to play, you know, I think the kid in Colorado was their number one prime example to anybody in a high CEO position or a high computer tech position that says to them, you mess with us, we're going to take your kids, we're going to scopolamine him for a month, and then we're going to take him and use him to shoot up a theater. And if you don't play ball the way we want you to, this is what's going to happen to you too. And I think it was a prime example to all of them what they could do. At the same time, they used it as, you know, gun control here in America. So, you know, it served two purposes for the evil cabal. They got what they wanted. They got everybody scared at the higher level of the pyramid. You know, I maybe some of them were starting to buck the system. I don't know. But it seemed to me it was put in play just to get them back under control again. So, I mean, that's just my observation as a concerned citizen and a person who's involved with all the mind control. It sure seemed that way to me. So,
Lorian Fenton, ladies and gentlemen, is my very special guest. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. We've come to the end of our first hour now. Bear in mind, this is a listener-supported broadcast, and we will be back in the next hour with even more content for you and even more super soldiers. Das Obersoldat is German for the super soldier, ladies and gentlemen, yes. And they also wear dust boots. And we'll be right back.
What a day for a daydream. What a day for a daydreaming boy. And I'm lost in a daydream. Dreaming about my bundle of joy. And even if time ain't really on my side, it's one of those days for taking a walk outside. I'm blowing the day to take a walk in the sun. And follow my face on somebody's new mowed lawn. I've been having a sweet dream. I've been dreaming since I woke up today. It's starring me in my sweet dream.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. It's the lighter side of genocide, because in a world so full of chaos and madness, if you lose a sense of humor, you go friggin' nuts. And my very special guests are super soldier consorts of sorts. We have James Rank and still the magnanimous, lascivious, and altogether delicious Lorian Fenton.
Oh, thank you, Vinny. I really appreciate you having me on the show today. I have never been called all three of those things in one sentence. So I really thank you for that. And let's see. Well, we kind of left off in the last hour with all of my stories from my youth and the bunny rabbit appearing and why I think that the whole super soldier cabal may have tried to use my DNA. If indeed they did, we don't know. But I'll tell you something very interesting. A lot of the young super soldiers that could be my children do look a lot like the people in my family. And what's even more uncanny is that they have all their mannerisms. I mean, it's just odd. I see Erin Hicks, and she looks a lot like my sister, and she acts like my sister. It's really weird and uncanny. And then Alara Blackwell, she is just like my other sister. It's like I'm hanging out with people in my family when I look at the two of them. And it's very weird. It's just, it's a weird sensation. I get around them and I know they feel it too. They feel like we're somehow related. And I don't know what
who knows,
means.
Maybe you got kidnapped and they sampled your DNA because of your powers and so on and so forth, and they hatched a couple of them.
That's what we're all thinking, you know, because it's like they like to... This is very odd. I used to be in the dog breeding when I was younger. We had a show dog, a Doberman Pinscher, and I learned about breeding dogs. And one of the things you have to do is you have to kind of go out of the branch a little bit to strengthen the whole line. And I think that by the people that my ancestors married out to, they were all pretty powerful people psychically, I believe, in their own right. And they're all still carrying that O negative or RH negative bloodline within it. And I think that they said, okay, we've got to now, this, the next generation, we've got to go out and get this type of bloodline to make this program work, because we need something that's not strictly from maybe the evil cabal whose bloodline. Yeah, yeah. So something along those lines. I don't know. And, you know, we may never know. And it could be all my imagination. You know, you get down to a point where you just kind of go, this could all just be nutso stuff and I don't even know what I'm talking about, but this is what we all kind of feel when we get together. So there's got to be some kind of truth to something somewhere. You know, it can't all be just clear cut and perfect scientific, you know, like everything that's real is factual and here it is. On a spiritual level, you kind of have to say, well, you know, if one girl looks like my sister and the other one looks like my sister and we all feel this connection, maybe there is some kind of soul connection. Maybe there is some DNA connection. Maybe there's something going on. But no matter what it is, I think that for the rest of my natural life, I believe, and I think James can attest to this, that most of the people that we've been hanging out with for the last couple, 3 years since we started the first Super Soldier Summit was, they're now part of our family. I mean, I believe that. I know James believes
it. Do you feel this wholeness kind of thing? Like, it doesn't matter what the connection is between you. The point is that you're connected and now you feel like more of a whole again.
Exactly. And, you know, we all get together at the summits and it's just like we're with our family. And I got to tell you, everybody hung out at the hotel an extra 2 and 3 days last time because nobody wanted to go home. Nobody wanted to go back to their real life because they were with their family. And it's a very spiritual, deep connection. And it may even just be as simple as people that are being abused and victimized by the evil cabal that I really believe is out there. And that's another thing, Vinny. Until I was 53 years old, I was a hippie chick. You know, I believed in aliens and I was running around doing UFO stuff. And I've never seen an alien. I've never seen a UFO until that night. I think I saw one. But, you know, I was very much just kind of, you know, knocking boots and having fun and just being a good old gal. And then this happened to me and I really believe in evil now.
Oh yeah. Well, and you would. Speaking of evil, you know what's a real evil thing to do somebody on radio? Have them hold on air quietly for ages while you keep talking and don't introduce them.
Oh, I'm so terrible. Just slap me. Okay, James Rink, my buddy, my best friend. What are you doing? Are you there?
Yeah, I'm listening. Yeah, it's very intriguing. I totally agree. Yeah, we're all one big family here now, even though we could be related. I wouldn't go put that, you know, out of the way. But I know, like, at least with a lot of people who have been in my lab experiments, our DNA has been harvested, and they are definitely – I mean, they're using us for whatever reason. They probably have huge stockpile of DNA to pick from and
– Oh, I'm sure of it.
Spread it around.
Yeah, I'm absolutely sure of it. You know, and James, I would definitely say that our family is very dysfunctional. At least you and Tyler, Alara, I would put Solaris in that group even more. Joanne Richards, you start rattling them off. There's about 12 or 14 of us that all pretty much have found each other. And there's always one or two in there that are fighting with each other. And they'll call me and they'll say, why is so-and-so not talking to me? And then I'll have to call the other one. I mean, I definitely am like the mother because I'm always in the middle of it when everything kind of falls apart. And they all call me and I have to call each one of them.
Do you have that motherly, do you have that mother sense? Like one time my brother was was going to jump off the garage roof and he had a Batman costume on. And mum was like right on the other side of the property. There's no possible way she could have seen him or heard him, but something told her run all the way to the garage. And as she got to the garage, she managed to catch him as he fell.
Oh my God, wonderful. Well, you know, it's interesting that you say that because every once in a while I'll get these twinges that they're calling me. I'll hear it in my head. It's like they're saying, I got to talk to you. I got to talk to you. And I will call them or they'll call me within 2 minutes. two or three minutes. It's just like I'm hearing it before it happens. I don't know how important that is.
It happens to me too as well, man. I remember this one time there was like real no food in the house and I was really craving a meat pie. And I was just sitting there and then all of a sudden there's a knock at the door and it's my mate Dan. And he goes, "Hey, bro, we bought you a meat pie."
I love that. Well, this seems to be only when they're in trouble. Believe me, it's more like, you know, I need $100. Something's gone wrong. The car's broken. I mean, it's never like, "Hi, how are you?" But what is funny, Vinny, is I did get two phone calls on Mother's Day. I was laughing over that one. You know, they text me, "Happy Mother's Day to the Super Soldier Mom," you know, that kind of thing. So it's very cute. It's dysfunctional for sure. And James will attest to that. I'm absolutely sure of that.
It sounds like the latest, AMC comedy or something like that, you know, like the Super Soldier family having to get together and they get into the situations. It'll be like The Simpsons, but in real life and with satanic rituals.
Yeah, but we don't like the satanic rituals. That's what we're fighting. We're fighting those. We don't want them to happen. We can't stand those people.
Oh, yeah. Which is why you talk about them and expose the scumbaggery.
That's right. The scumbaggery. That's right. That's a Vinnie Eastwoodism. Definitely. The scumbaggeries. James, what is your feeling on the whole mother of the clan situation we got going on here? Am I a good mother to you guys?
You're a very good mother. Yeah, you would make an excellent surrogate mother if we could have one.
Yeah, that's for sure. You know, it's very interesting because I really feel like something bizarre has happened between you and I, James. Remember the whole story you heard? I don't know where you heard it. Somebody told you when I was sick that they used your DNA to save me. Do you remember that story?
Yeah, it was something about mantoids. They laid some eggs in your lymph. Wait, no, it was your lungs?
My lungs, yeah. Now, this is funny, Vinny, and I still laugh about this. These mantoid beings supposedly laid eggs in my lungs, and that's why I got triple pneumonia and almost died in 2009. But, you know, there's
something... Yeah, my sister had a cicada do that to her once.
There is something to it, though, because a year after this, and I told James this, I thought it was really weird that he told me this story. Well, finish the story, James. Supposedly, they laid these things in my lungs and...
Right. Okay. And then they harvested my DNA and they made a serum or some kind of vaccination to treat it. So, allegedly, I saved your life, but I...
Exactly.
I don't necessarily trust that. Well, you know, maybe it's true. I don't know.
Well, I don't believe that it's true in the sense that that's exactly what happened. And didn't Semenji, the alien warrior that's supposedly here protecting the planet, administer the drug that they made from you, the serum? Wasn't that part of the story too?
Oh, I don't remember that part. No, I don't know, but.
Yeah, well, somebody came into my room. That's all I remember. There was somebody in the story that was like an alien or somebody came and gave me the serum.
Well, speaking of that, somebody came into my room today. Tonight. I was on the phone again with my friend. And next thing I know, my nose starts hurting and it's like a scab what Mark was taking. And my friend, he's very gifted psychic and he's saying – How come I couldn't see it? Then he said that he sees a silver flash. Next thing he says, 3 seconds pass by, and there's a group of grays. They come and harvest your DNA. They take a little bit of scoop mark, and then they're going to go off and probably make clone bodies for super soldier stuff. And but supposedly they like stop time, even though I guess – but he said 3.5 seconds went by. But maybe 3.5 seconds on my perspective, but on their perspective, they slowed time down and they did all the whatever work they needed to do. And so he said he destroyed the sample and told them not to come back. But they've been coming back. He says they've been coming back about 3 to 5 times a week. And that seems about right.
Well, you're a unique situation within the Super Soldier community, and I'm going to tell the audience a little story that I found very intriguing because, you know, James is – he has these what I call fantastical stories, but just like the story about my lungs with the mantoids laying the eggs in it, I always feel there's a bit of truth into part of it because – he may be looking at it from a more psychic standpoint in a lot of cases, which you really can't always get the actual hard facts out of. But there always seems to be some kind of truth to it. Now, there are so many
what
people...
What is a mantoid, though? I mean, is it like a just an older version of a boytoid?
No, it's actually an alien, and they're the mantoid aliens, and they're the taller ones that look like the praying mantis, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, some of them, they don't have a soul. Well, some of them anyway, and they're animated by the life force energy of the planet, and they view other races as something to be harvested and just used. You know, it's like
there's like some giant I don't know, like alien DNA specimen semen jumping spraying device up there, like could just swoop over a city and like make every woman pregnant, you know, like a Snoop Dogg concert.
Oh, I wouldn't doubt it at all.
Well, okay,
here, I wouldn't doubt this, it at all.
This was from a remote viewing session. Well, actually, I was describing my friends some like this flash of a memory I had, and basically I was walking down a long hallway in a very advanced city. It almost looked like Coruscant in the Star Wars movie with the spires and the huge buildings. And apparently this was a Orion Prime in the Draco homeworld. And I was sent on a mission, and I had a piece of paper in my hand, and I was reading it, and it was basically a list of all the secret projects and what was going on here on planet Earth, and had like a list of how many spaceships the Cabal had, which is about, I think it was about 250. It had a list of how many Greys clones were being delivered to the government, to the Cabal, about 100,000 annually, and they would drop dead. And what they would actually do with these Greys is they had the receptacle inside of them that would go to a male and take the semen, and then it would store the semen inside the receptacle, then it would go to a female and insert it. And so they were going around doing all these genetic experiments on people unknowingly. And of course they were also doing it. These Greys would inject viruses and nanobots and stuff to mind control people or, you know, mutate their DNA or kill them if need be.
Wow. Well, see, now that's what I like about you, James. You tell exactly what you're going through and what's happening. And what a lot of people want to poo-poo what you're having to say, and you know my biggest goal is to get us taken seriously, you know, for what we're doing. And I got to tell you, Vinny, a lot of what James has had to say is being reported by other alien encounter people like Melinda Leslie. I mean, the list goes. I mean, my God.
Oh, it's the same deal, man. There's tens of thousands of testimonies that rival this, you know? It's either a shared experience that's totally so realistic and so visceral that people can't even tell it from reality, and they can't tell the difference between whether it was a dream or a memory. Or it's real, and this stuff is happening. And there's sophisticated devices and things of this nature which these advanced races have got to really mess with people's memories. And in some cases, that's not even required because a lot of these people wind up getting kidnapped by the military and enslaved and mind-controlled anyway.
Exactly. And what's interesting, Vinny, is that most of the people that are having alien encounters are usually the people being used in the super soldier programs, in the mind control programs. They all fall together. And a lot of the kids coming out of the satanic ritual abuse and cabal or whatever, those kids are being used. And their children, in many cases, which I'm finding horrific and I'm finding more and more about this daily, is they are using them to breed more children so they can kill them during these satanic rituals. Isn't that scary? I mean, I just...
When I was in that city, in Orion Prime, that was the other thing on the list. Was basically they were kidnapping people from on planet Earth, the reptilians. And by the way, this planet was filled with reptilians, and I was in a reptilian body when I presented this list. But that's kind of complex to explain about that. But
what did it feel like to have a reptilian body, bro? Like, did you have a tail and stuff? Did you have claws? Could you like
What I saw in my mind was I was looking at the piece of paper. My hands looked like claws. And so that was the only image I really got to look at my own body, because, you know, when you're in that body, you don't really pay attention to yourself. Or when these memories come to, you're not going to, like, look yourself – well, maybe you look at yourself in the mirror, but I don't recall what I actually look like.
Do you recall what the claws look like?
I was in a silver form, and usually reptilians are butt naked. They don't like to wear clothes because it hurts their scales.
Oh, but that's interesting.
Not entirely dissimilar from a drug dealer.
You know, James, that is just so weird that you're saying this, because remember, and this is what I want to tell the audience. Now, James has these amazing stories, and like I always tell him, I say, you just make us sound like a bunch of crazy fools by telling these stories. But in a weird sense, I, you know, being the grounded one of the group, that, and I'm always trying to tell people, look, take us seriously. We may sound like a bunch of fruitcakes, but we really do have something going on here, or we wouldn't be talking about it, because it's touching all of our lives in a very real sense, even though we may have some, you know, like memories or what I call that they're letting us have these screen memories of stuff. Maybe they actually want him to see what they're doing up on this other planet. I don't know if the planet even exists or if that's what they're doing, but I've had an experience with James that really blew my mind. I was sitting at the registration desk, and James, you know what I'm going to say. I'm sitting at the registration desk at the Super Soldier Summit 2, and I see out of the corner of my eye that James is walking towards me through a doorway, and he's bouncing off of the wall, kind of, that is there. And not bouncing in a sense. He's leaning up against it, and then he'll lean away, and they'll kind of bounce back into it. And he looks like he is completely not here. Like he is being mind controlled or something's wrong. I looked up in the instant I saw him, and I went, what is wrong with him? And the minute I thought that, I saw one of his eyes, it would be his right eye and his right thigh, like in the Matrix, turn into pixelated versions of his eye being a slit like a reptilian, and his thigh being kind of grayish red or brownish red and turning into scales and growing. And it was just the weirdest experience. I mean, I'm like looking at him, and it happened for a fraction of a second, and then he went back to normal, and then he kind of bounced off the wall a couple more times and came towards me. And I'm sitting there, and I look at him, and I say, James, are you okay? And James, what was going on at the time that I saw this? Because I really did see it, folks. I'm looking at him, and it was only for a fraction of a second, but I really saw it.
They were playing a screenshot from the movie Oblivion, and they were playing music from the movie Oblivion. And at that time, I did not see that movie yet. But whatever it was, that whatever was on the screen or in the music was kind of making me kind of I don't know how to describe it. Be triggered, maybe.
Intense déjà vu.
Yeah, I guess you could say that, but I. I was trying not to think about I guess maybe a flash of memory or images was coming into my mind. I was trying not to think about it because, I was trying to stay focused on being at the Super Soldier Summit, whatever task I had on hand. Didn't want to start, you know, doing whatever I do. I'm still trying to figure out exactly, because, you know, this show is about super soldiers, and I just thought I would mention that from what I'm able to recall, it appears that I have not been used in this physical body in this dimension as a super soldier. However, with that said, it appears that I have at least 11 clones, nine of them don't have a soul, and those are most exclusively used for off-world missions. I'm not quite sure if I actually controlling these through some kind, maybe they put me in some kind of trip seat here in this physical dimension and I try to drive them like an avatar, or whether or not they're just remotely controlled with some kind of artificial consciousness in them. But but it does appear that I was at Montauk. I've had at least from my perspective, I feel like I was there. Oh, I went. Do you know who Preston Nichols is?
No,
I do.
Yeah. Well, he was one of the.
Well, let's tell the audience a little bit about Preston Nichols so people understand who you're talking about. He was one of the scientists at the Montauk Project. If it was for real, and you know, folks, like I say, I never know if any of this stuff's real or not. But apparently, Preston was there, and they did time travel experiments, but also experiments where they sent people to different dimensions, supposedly, and they used a lot of young boys in these experiments. But they were also supposedly working alongside some reptilians. And the famous story goes that Preston gave one of the reptilians antifreeze for your car because they used to like to drink it because it made them drunk. And this is one of the far-fetched stories that came out of Montauk.
Oh, I thought it was Drano.
Was it Drano? I thought it was antifreeze.
Well,
see,
I'm pretty
that's
sure
what I mean.
Drano.
That's how far-fetched the stories get. So,
see,
you know,
I thought if you wanted to hear Montauk, you'd go to Jamaica.
Montauk. Hey, Mon, you gonna talk? Anyhow,
well,
just, yes, of course, we got to talk Mon because it's Montauk Project.
Exactly. Well, you know, like I say, the Montauk Project, I believe, happened. I think just like the Super Soldier program, that there is a very real 3D dimension to it, and I akin it to, and I tell everybody this. Don't let these wild stories sway you and make you think that we're all nuts. Because remember in the movie The Manchurian Candidate with Denzel Washington, the opening scene is that they're in this room and there's belly dancing a lady with snake heads and all these crazy things going on. And those are the screen memories that they give these guys so that when they get out in the world and they actually talk about this, people think they're nuts. So,
also there's the idea to actually implant false crazy memories so that when people they don't know the difference between what was what really happened and what's actually just a story that they've used their mind to fill in the blanks.
Glad you brought that up because
yes.
At least I know a lot of people that have been involved with this, what they actually do is they put us into what is known – well – and it's called various things, a trip seat or a total recall memory boot up system or chair. And they move the memories around. But a lot of people are trained in virtual reality scenarios where they may be thinking that they were sent on a super soldier-like mission where it was all basically just a test to see whether or not they would be suitable candidate material or training for that matter.
For a brainwashing program, you know, that they need them
too.
To do something else with. You know, maybe they need James to go off and tell his story in one area of town so they can go use somebody else to do the killing in another part of town for some reason. Who knows what they do? I mean, this is the part,
May I interject and I want to put an observation upon you? Maybe we can't even project how bad, terrible, and deceptive they are because we're not as psychopathic.
Well, that's the problem. In a nutshell, that's truly the problem. That is the conclusion I came to a few months ago. I was sitting here and I went, you know what? I'm never going to figure this out because I don't understand their motives. I don't even understand why they'd want to mind control anybody in the first place, let alone figure out why they're doing it. And I have no idea why they do this to use other people to kill other people. I can tell you this, though, that Colorado... Aurora shooter, that poor kid, I really do think it was all about control of his family and showing the others in the evil cabal, this is what we're going to do to you if you don't play ball the way we want you to. I think it's that simple.
Similar message that was being sent when they shot Kennedy from the front.
Oh, sure. You got it. You know, it's the same thing. You know, they always want to show that they're in control and however they do it to the best of their advantage, you know, good for them, I guess.
They're like the penguins off of Madagascar, you know? You catch them in the middle of the act and all they do is wave their flippers and go, you didn't see anything.
Exactly. But here's one thing, Vinny. My new pursuit on this is, why are they doing this to certain people, not others? And then why do they even need to do it at all? So now there you go. What's their
bloodlines? I've seen that all of the super soldiers seem to have some kind of bloodline connection way back in the past or something of that nature. It's all there. It runs through families, whole families of people who get indoctrinated into the system, and you've got to somehow capture souls. I guess it is. It's otherworldly. Right? We're not talking about entities with earthly ambitions. Nothing like, you know, just as simple as money or power, you know? Nothing logical.
At least the people involved in the super soldier program tend to have a lot of reptilian genetics, because they're looking for people. If you have the reptilian DNA, you have the strength that goes with it. And also, it does appear like maybe a mixture of Palladian as well, because the Palladian, you get the sensing and the feeling. So when you combine both of that with the strengths and the feeling, you have a really powerful soldier.
Well, that makes sense, because that must be my Italian side. I'm just laughing. Oh, yeah. My God. Well, you know, getting back to that whole thing about the stuff in my lungs, you know, I want people to really understand. I don't believe it was, that alien. I don't believe it was any of that stuff going on. But I can tell you this. A year after I had that happen and I almost died, I end up back in the hospital again, because they told me, if you start getting a cold and you feel like your lungs are getting, you know, something's going on, you get to the emergency room immediately, because you could die so easily having had this once. So I get there, and this doctor walks into the ER. I've never seen her before, and believe me, I'm a frequent flyer at this hospital. So she walks in, I've never seen her before, and she says to me, "Hi, I'm so-and-so." And I said, "Well, when did you end up here again? I've never seen you at the hospital." She goes, "Oh, I just got through with my Army duty, and I was at the CDC for a while, and now I'm here and, you know, back in Marin County and blah, blah, blah." And I said, "Oh, that's great." So she checks me out. She goes, "You know, I don't think you've got it again. I'm going to look at your x-rays from last year when you were hospitalized, and I'll come back and talk to you." So she walks in the room a few minutes later. She's holding an x-ray from, and it's printed on paper. It's not an x-ray, but it's, you know, a printout. And she's looking at it. She's kind of shaking her head. She's looking at me, and she looks up, and she goes, "I don't get it." And I said, "What?" She goes, "Well, you know, regular pneumonia is black spots on your lung where the fluid is filling in." And she goes, "Look at this." And I look at it with her. She goes, "It looks like there was popcorn stuffed into your lungs." And she's just talking to herself, and she says to herself, "Gosh, you know, I've never seen anything like this. It looks like it was man-made." And I listen to that, and then she stops talking, and she closes the file, and she goes, "Oh, you're fine. Don't worry about it. Just go on home. Take, you know, here's some antibiotics, blah, blah, blah." And I got home, and I got thinking. I thought, wow, that was the weirdest encounter I've ever had. Here she is saying that looked man-made. She'd never seen anything like it before. And I got to thinking, whoa, maybe that's why they put me in a room all by myself. Maybe that's why I was in ICU and they were wearing those bubble masks and nobody would come into the room when I was there. You know, a lot of strange things happened during that hospitalization. Now, those were 3D reality things that happened. So the story about the, you know, the whatever we call it, the mantoid or whatever, laying stuff in my lungs, maybe that's a screen memory that James picked up on from maybe the CDC developing some kind of, you know, weapon, and they wanted to test it out on somebody with my makeup or DNA to see if it would kill me in 2 seconds flat or if I would survive it. So who knows?
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, Vinny, you are still there. Good. I was worried. I thought I put you to sleep.
No.
Oh, dear. Well, we're both drinking enough coffee to keep all of us awake here, so.
It should be. I drank so much coffee, I had to come up with a new name for the kind of coffee drinker I am. I'm a caffeined.
You're caffeined. scene. I love it. I love it. Well, anyhow, so what do you think of that idea? Because I'm telling you, I think everything they do, they may mask it with some kind of fantastical story, whereas in actuality, they're just being very clinical and very scientific.
Well, I think it's about, you know how there's like a spectrum between absolute truth and complete fallacy. And in the middle is this thing called possibility, right? So when somebody tells me something and there's not enough proof to say that it's definitely true, but there's also not enough proof to say that it's definitely a lie, all it does for me is just chuck it in the possibility basket. And later on, I might hear something else that corroborates what was said there. And then it goes closer to the true basket, whilst not yet leaving the possibility one until there's absolute proof of some description. You know?
Exactly.
You can be worried about all the possibilities. Like, I remember my guitarist, Mike, was this is classic. He only just heard about the reptilians, first of all, and he was, like, freaking out. We were in the car, and he's, like, going, oh, my God, man, anybody could be one of them. He's going to come and get me. And I was like, okay, bro, tell me, yeah, have you ever seen a reptilian? No. Have you even heard whisper of a reptilian until now when you watched a video about it? No? Well, then the rest of your life is probably going to behave much the same. You're going to be freaking yourself out and getting scared of something that you have never and may never encounter.
Oh, that is so true. You know, and, you know, I've got to say, folks, the whole super soldier thing, like I said, it could be a really true, honest-to-God thing happening. It could be all implanted memories or stories or things they want to do to make us all look like a bunch of crazies, which, you know, we could be. I don't know, but I feel pretty grounded. I feel pretty 3D. I measure things that happen to me. I don't...
There is an old saying, you can't make this shit up.
That's for sure. And believe me, folks, I'm 56. This happened when I was 53. And I'm at that point where I'm going, why me? You know, I could have gone my whole life without ever having to know about any of this. You know, seriously, if I could have gone my whole life without knowing about super soldiers or never even heard the word, I would have been happy. So whatever happened to me, like you said, it's definitely something where I made an agreement somewhere in my brain or with some spiritual being or somebody somewhere along the line to fight whoever the evil entities are on this planet doing whatever they're doing. Because, you know, honestly, Vinny, no one has the right to go into your mind and mess with it the way these people are doing. And, you know, Robert Duncan with his books, Soul Catcher and Soul Catcher 2, and his new one, by the way, you really need to interview this guy. It's a new book on how to protect yourself from this evil cabal of mind control. And he says it's all very real. He was one of the designers of it. So, you know, I mean, I know there's a lot of reality. There's a basket for a lot of reality going on with what they're doing to people, you know. And the stories are great. I mean, I love listening to them all. But, you know, whether they're all true or not, it's another whole issue. But there's something going on. I can definitely tell people that. Definitely something going on.
Well, have you ever seen a movie that you thought was pretty bang on the truth? It may not have been reality, but it was still very interesting.
Exactly. Well, you know, the Last Born movie, James, did you ever see the Last Born movie with the character named Aaron?
I don't. Yeah, I think I have.
You know, where they designed him in that the lab, or, you know, the girl was the doctor in the lab, and they went in,
okay,
they shut everybody up.
Oh,
anyhow,
yeah. Okay.
Yeah, that Last Born movie, I was told by some insider people that movie was absolutely true. I mean, if people want to watch that, I mean, some of the stunts and some of the things and the people going after him and trying to shoot him and kill him and all that may not be as true. But the part about the lab, the development of the serums, turning them into super soldiers with extra strength and vision and, their bones being harder than other people and all the things they did to them in that lab, that whole part of it is absolutely true. And apparently...
Like the serums, they're like a green, thick goo, and they have a bunch of nanites in them, nanobots.
Now, how do you know this, James?
Because that sounds like it's out of the, what's it called, Cobra movie. Yeah. G.I. Joe, The Rise of Cobra. He had green gooey nanites, then he had missiles and stuff like that, and they ate tanks and the Eiffel Tower.
Well, you know what's interesting about this nanite thing? I've been doing a lot of research into it, and I'm very surprised that we're very close in the scientific community to having the type of nanites that can actually go in and adhere themselves to bone structure and actually make the bone stronger. This is a new thing that they're developing, and they're calling it, I can't even remember what they called it now, some type of
Marmites, Vegemites.
Vegemite. I love Vegemite. But anyhow, I mean, these scientists are really getting close to doing this type of thing. And who knows, you know, what we can read in the scientific journals and we can find online and what's going on out there. My God, folks, I bet you we're 20 years behind knowing what they're really doing. I believe that.
Oh, it's quite funny. I was interviewing this guy one time. Sorry, James. Actually, go ahead. James, are you there?
Yeah.
Go ahead, man. Were you saying something?
No.
Okay, never mind.
Keep going. I want to hear your story.
Okay, well, I was talking
to someone.
And he had this guy that he interviewed, you know, periodically. And, like, in the 70s he interviewed him when he was a lot younger. And he goes, man, the level of technology that they've got there is 10 years in advance of anything you can think of. And you're like, wow. And then he interviews him in the 80s, and he goes, man, the technology we've got now. Oh, no, actually, you're saying how bad things are going to get, or how bad things are. And he says, man, things are about 1,000 times worse than you could ever possibly imagine. And he interviews him in the 90s, and he goes, man, things are 10,000 times what you could possibly imagine as bad as they'd be. And then he interviews him in the 2000s, and he goes, mate, they're 100,000 times as bad as they could possibly be. You know? And it's just, I think that everything just keeps getting worse and worse and worse for some people, and they focus on how bad everything gets, and they forget to try and make it better.
Well, yeah, I agree with you on that. I totally agree with you, Vinny. But there is a point where we do have to wake up and we have to say, look, these guys are out there. They are doing mind control. They are figuring out ways to enhance our bodies, because you just go online and look at when you type in super soldier as a reference point in Google, you come up with all these things that the military is doing to enhance their soldiers on with a super soldier body shield that they are not, what do they call it? Body armor or exoskeleton?
Like an exoskeleton.
Yeah, an exoskeleton that they get into, and their whole body is, you know, like in Elysium, you know, when they put that thing on him. Oh, my God.
Yeah, drill it into his nervous system.
Oh, my God. Isn't that wild? Anyhow, that's what they're making right now. Now, who knows that they're not telling us something they've already developed like 10 years ago. You know, because and another thing that we haven't even touched upon today is what I believe we do have some sort of secret space program. I really believe that's going on out there. After seeing that triangle, which may or may not have been a triangle, and I have no idea what it was, and having been in the UFO community as long as I have, I am actually a MUFON section director up here in Northern California, and I hold meetings once a month for people that, you know, want to find out more about UFOs and aliens.
And after the meeting ends, do you tell everybody to just move on?
Actually, I should do that next time. That'll be funny. But, you know, the whole thing is I've been hearing from people for years about their alien abduction experiences and their alien encounters with spacecrafts and all kinds of things. I've never seen any of this stuff or experienced any of it. But, you know, it's there. So, you know, it can't all be outer space beings coming here. I really think that probably 80% of what's out there is ours. I think we have the knowledge. And I think they're never going to let the U.S. population know what they know. And I just think it's a big farce out there. And I think, you know what bothers me the most? Is that the people, at least in the United States, are dumb enough to believe that we don't have those ships. That those would be alien ships. They think 100% of them are alien. My thought is 80% are ours. You know, and I think the government just laughs at all these people who say, oh, yeah, the aliens were outside my house last night and this and that, you know, and I think it was probably them. So I don't know. And who knows what they're doing? You know, maybe they are fighting with aliens. Maybe they're fighting with each other. I have no clue what they're up to, but I really think it's them. So, and you're talking to somebody who listens to UFO stories all the time. And, you know, on my radio show, I interview a lot of people who, you know, have been abducted and see UFOs and all that. And I still think that part of it's military. So, anyhow, well, that's just like my opinion.
That was through Project Solar Warden.
What's Project Solar Warden, James? I haven't even heard of that.
That's the U.S. space program, the real one, where they actually have ships that allegedly can go off-world, which I don't know if that's
cool.
True.
Wouldn't that be fun?
I think David Hasselhoff could have his own planet or space station or something. You could call it Hoff
Planet.
Planet Hollywood.
Yeah, Hoff Planet. I'd love to get him to his own Hoff Planet. That'd be great. We need him off world anyhow.
Well, chances are they're probably connected to My Labs, where basically My Labs is one group. I believe it's centered in the United States, and any other faction or other group of ET that wants a Greys want to harvest a certain subset of human population, they would contact My Labs and say, hey, we want to order such and such and such, and they'll place an order, and My Labs will do it. And it's such as Greys, any kind of, you know, even in within the military would go to them. So they're just like mercenaries. And so they're probably the ones that are connected to Solar Warden.
Interesting. Hey, Vinny, have you been talking to any of the people that are involved with the UFO abduction
I have several weeks of guests on that particular subject. Yeah.
Has any of them mentioned to you that recently, within the last few years, there has been a consensus going around between all of the people being abducted that there possibly is a big slowdown or even a stoppage of them taking sperm and ovum and creating hybrid children?
I've never heard of that. No.
Oh, okay. Because what's interesting, the last couple of years I've gone to the UFO Congress. I did not make it this year, the International UFO Congress, because I couldn't. There was long reasons why, but I couldn't make it. But the 2 years before, the experiencers meet like four times or five times during the Congress, and there's about 80 to 100 of them in the room, and they speak to people like Barbara Lamb or Yvonne Smith, some of the more prominent hypnotherapist in the community that help people that have had PTSD from their alien abduction experiences or their MyLab experiences. And up until just this year, they were even including people who were under mind control in these groups. And one of the things that's come out of it is that the whole, you know, creating the hybrid children, taking sperm and ovum, doing all these experiments has pretty much come to a halt in the last like 4 to 5 years. The Greys have not been harvesting as much materials to use for anything. And what's even more interesting is the ships that they were described for, you know, 50, 60 years that would come here and do those kinds of experiments. The ships that they would fly in were usually more of a disc-shaped silver craft. And now what we're seeing in the skies much more often than any type of silver disc-shaped object is a glowing, fiery orange or white UFO out there that actually has the ability to break up into many pieces and pull itself back together again. It's more ethereal. It's not really this hard silver metallic ship, which I find extremely interesting.
Like a transformer.
I mean, it's not in the sense of the Transformers because they were all metallic, but these are just like, you've heard of the orbs, those bright glowing objects that float around the size of a basketball.
I met somebody at a party and she showed us this picture that she just took the night before, and she goes, what is that? Like, that's the moon right there. What the hell is this? And we go, oh, it's an orb. She'd never heard of it before.
Oh, well, interesting.
I've got footage when I was visiting Tyler, we were filming the moon, and I was just joking. I say, why don't the aliens just make a fly over the moon or so we can see them? And right then, it shows on the footage, like, this little disc-like craft flew, like, a quarter side of the moon.
But so, how big was it? Was it far away or close, James?
Well, I couldn't tell because of the distance, because it's in the telescope and it was in front of the moon. So, I mean, it all depends on how close, far it was.
Yeah,
moon,
exactly. So it could have been, 400 miles long or a foot long.
Yeah.
Depending on if it was right in front of the telescope or not.
But it definitely was not a mosquito in front of the lens or anything like that. You're like, oh my God, what is that alien insect?
God, that's probably a mantoid right there for us all. Oh my God. Well, anyhow, I just find it intriguing that a lot of the people that are having abductions now are not having that type of abduction. They're not having the ovum, sperm, we're going to create babies abduction anymore. The abductions are actually becoming much more spiritually oriented. And I can't go into detail because I wasn't at the last the Congress. I just heard secondhand from several people in the experiencers group that they were shocked that all these people are now getting spiritual awakening type of contact, and they are getting much more what I would call training in their contact, where they're getting told things, they're getting taught things, they're getting taught languages, they're being put in front of computer screens. Like, there's a famous abductee in America called Jim Sparks, who for years would be fighting these aliens, and they were doing the whole sperm thing from him and creating babies. And then later on, as he got older and he stopped fighting them, they started putting in front of screens and teaching him their language and doing all these things to him. And it was a big, long progression for him. But he was one of the first persons I ever heard this story coming out of him. And I thought it was very intriguing. But now it seems that most of these people that have been having experience their entire life are getting much more spiritual and training type of abduction. And I find that fascinating. And, maybe everybody's consciousness has changed. I don't know. But I think they're done. I think the grays are finished. I think they've done their program. They may have figured out that they can't save their species in the future if they are indeed us from the future, which is what I've heard from a lot of people, and that they came back here to strengthen their species because it was dying, and maybe they're finished. Who knows? Or maybe we live on in the future because of what they did here now. I don't know. But apparently in a dimensional world that we live in, where we're right next door to the next dimension, we're one, what we call one DNA molecule or one DNA strand over from the next dimension, and one light spectrum, because our eyes can only see a small spectrum of light and color and, what have you. If we were just, one DNA strand and one light spectrum over, we'd be in another dimension, and maybe we're all the same there with just a little bit different traits. Who knows? I mean, it's a wild, wild concept, and it's hard for people, I think, that are just raised, have a job, and raised normally, have a job, go about having children and have a normal life and watch TV and just do the thing, to understand that, possibly, I was laying in bed one time, and I thought I heard myself walk in the front door, put the keys on the table. I was wearing a pair of high heels. I walked into the kitchen. I started humming a song that I haven't hummed for a long time, and I started making dinner. I'm laying there in bed in my bedroom hearing all this, and I realized, man, maybe I'm having a bleed over into another dimension and actually hearing myself in the same house. And it's just, it was a wild thought. Maybe I was dreaming. Maybe I was half awake and half asleep. I don't know. But whatever it was an interesting thought in the moment. And I wished in that moment I was also a scientist, because I thought, oh boy, I'd love to be able to figure that one out in quantum physics. Well, any comments, James, about what we've been talking about here tonight about the UFO people and aliens?
Well, one in particular.
Well, I'm just, you know, I was just kind of, you know, throwing everything out there in a giant puddle. Have you heard anybody tell you that the aliens are stopping their harvesting of whatever DNA material they're using or any of that? I mean, is this something I'm just hearing about? Because
No, I haven't. I haven't heard that. I don't see any reason why they would stop. I mean, the negative Anunnakis who are in control of this planet still are in control. Maybe they were harvesting the DNA because we were on a negative timeline, but now we've managed to pass the cutoff point, which was
seeing as we're in the business of wild speculation, maybe they're collecting DNA samples on everything so that they can do a kind of like Noah's Ark type thing and just delete everybody and then clone everything back.
Oh, God, I was hoping you wouldn't say that.
I don't think that's going to happen on this timeline. I think it's going to be a positive. Well, I mean.
Yeah, I know. I was just scaring the crap out of everybody for the fun of it.
You know, James, I think you're right. I don't feel the end of the world thing happening. Everybody says it's all going to happen. I'm just like, I'm with Vinny on this one. I just don't feel it's going to happen.
I'm a perpetual doomsday naysayer. Somebody tells me it's the end of the world, bro, and I was like, I don't care, bro. And they're like, what, hold on a second, but there's all this evidence that it's going to be the end of the world. Again, I don't care. If it's not the end of the world, then I'll spend all my time stressing about it and I'll die because of the stress, which will cause me sickness and illness. And if it is the end of the world, I'll get sick and stressed and die before the end of the world comes. So I'd rather not freaking know about it, and I'd rather live in denial, thank you very much, because it's far more important to my survival sake.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. You know, and you know, it goes along with the super soldiers. Like I said, I've been trying to legitimize it the best I can so that people understand that some very bizarre stuff is happening to a lot of people. And I brought in the alien experiencers. I brought in the mind controlled people. You know, the people that are really getting the brunt of it right now are the targeted individuals. You know about the naval yard shooter, right, Vinny? Well, let me tell you, the group that I'm working with that actually presented at the last Super Soldier Summit called Covert Harassment and Surveillance. I'll look it up on the next break and I'll get it out for you. But they're an amazing group. They deal with all these targeted individuals. They have 7 phone calls a week where you can call in if you believe you're one of these targeted individuals and talk to up to 200 people at a time about their experiences and your experiences, and you guys can share. I mean, it's an amazing group. It's Freedom from Covert Harassment and Surveillance. That's the name of the group. So if you guys look that up on the internet, Freedom from Covert Harassment and Surveillance, you will find them and they can help you out. At least they can give you some camaraderie so you guys can, whoever's targeted out there, people that are hearing voices in their head, people that are having beams shot at them where they can't sleep and they're in pain. And I mean, there's a myriad of things they're doing to these poor people. And the ones I feel the most sorry for are the ones that are having the voice-to-skull communication, and they are never left alone, and they are constantly being attacked. And those are the ones my heart breaks for them, because nobody believes them, and they're in constant agony, and they've got people from our military talking in their heads to them, telling them, you know, these horrible things, like, we're going to rape your daughter, we're going to kill your mother, we're going to, you know, just horrible things all the time. And it's a running commentary in their head about everything that's going on in their life from moment to moment. And I can't even imagine that happening to me. Thank God it never has. I can tell you this, after having the experience where the helicopter shows up with me thinking about it, I can tell you they're doing it. If someone had told me 4 years ago that these people were hearing voices, I would have said, get him some Prozac and throw him in the loony bin. But now I'm like, oh my God, I'm sure it's happening. I'm sure they're telling the truth.
Yeah.
And they need to be helped.
The universe is messing with me.
Well, the universe...
But what can they do? Yeah, what can they do to get helped?
Oh, well, here's the thing. Sometimes being helpless is much better and easier to bear if you've got a group of other people around you who are also helpless in that regard. And in so doing, you gather together and you go stronger.
Exactly. They've got actual legal, what do you call it when you're going after the government? They're filing all kinds
class
of lawsuits.
Class action lawsuit.
They're doing a class action lawsuit right now. They've got a couple other things going on. It's a very powerful group. They've combined forces with a group in Europe and Japan and Canada and South America. And there's a lot of people out there trying to help these people. So, you know, especially now, I'm going to go back to what I was really trying to talk about here at the beginning of this mind control and voice of skull communication. That Naval Yard shooter was in touch with Freedom from Covert Harassment and Surveillance. He had sent them an email before he did the shooting and said that they were putting thoughts in his head and they were telling him to kill people and all this was going on. And after he actually got, I think, on one of the phone calls on a Saturday night and was talking to the group. And then about a week later, now don't quote me on that because I may be wrong about him actually being on a call, but I know for a fact he did send the email to Derek Robinson, the head of Covert Harassment and Surveillance, and told him what they were doing to him. And so after he did shoot the people and killed himself, I believe, I think he killed himself. I'm not sure if he was shot or not. Can't remember the whole story. They confiscated his computer and found out that he had been in touch with this group, and they went personally, the FBI, to both Derek's house on the West Coast and the other guy that is the director of the organization on the East Coast. And they questioned them for hours about this guy. And what the two guys told the FBI agents that were in their house bothering them about this was, well, you guys are doing this to people. Why don't you deal with it from your side and go after the people that actually put the voice to skull communication in the poor guy's head and made him kill everybody? You know, and they fought with them about this, and it really turned the two FBI agents at the house on the West Coast, and I don't know how many guys were at the East Coast house. It got them thinking about, well, maybe we are the cause of this, you know? And so I thought that was intriguing that they they were turning the tables on these poor FBI guys to understand that this isn't just some little thing going on here with one guy. They pulled out all the paperwork. They pulled out all the emails. They pulled out all the people. They said, look, we've got a whole email list of 4,000 people that you guys are doing this to in your government, you know? So I thought that was very intriguing. I think everybody needs to know about that, that at least these guys are out there to help, you know, and I think they're wonderful and they've done a great job, and they did give us some amazing presentations. James, did you stick around for when the guy did the presentation about the animals being used by the people who program through the targeted individual program where they put, you know, thoughts in their heads and mind controlled them and wiped their memories and stuff. Did you stick around for that?
Wow. No, I did. How were they mind controlling these animals?
Oh my God, this was so intriguing. I only caught a very short part of it, but they actually implant devices in birds and your pets and different animals that are around your household so they can keep track of you through the animals. Because that's how advanced their devices are. I don't know if people have done the research on this, but if you have, you will find that they actually have a in-eye camera that they can implant into a human's eye, an animal's eye, or, you know, whatever they're using, I guess. And it's real. It was developed years ago. They've made it smaller and smaller and smaller. They used to have a lot of problems with it. Apparently now it's not nearly the problem it used to be, because the eye is a viscerous, cylinder. It just kind of, they can anchor it and float it in the eye next to the iris. And it's wild. And they've actually got pictures of people who have these cameras implanted in their eyes. And they are developing them for covert ops so that they could just watch the covert op going on.
I was just imagining for a minute this syringe going plunging directly into my eyeball, and then it stuck in there, and I'm going, and then a little chip, a little camera thing comes down and goes, you know, into the soft gelatin.
I know, but they've got pictures on the internet. If people are interested, you can see this. It's out there. I mean, it's not like it's, been hidden. And you know what's even more intriguing? I'm developing a presentation on Hollywood television and super soldiers in the mind controlled. And I have been gathering up all the new TV shows that mention super soldiers or anything having to do with that. Have you guys seen the new TV show called Intelligence?
No, what's that about?
I find that a very ironically named TV show to play in America these days.
Yeah, I do too, believe me. But it's about a guy that's an ex, Marine or whatever. I can't even remember. Army, secret army program, whatever. Anyhow, he gets discharged from the Army, I guess, and they find out that he has a genetic disposition or some kind of special quality that his brain can accept an implant from a microchip, a computer chip. So this guy can actually he can look through his eyes and see the whole air in front of him becomes like a translucent TV screen or a picture or a 3D rendering of a room, or he can measure. Like the last episode, they had a minefield underneath the ground. So he looks at the ground, you see a grid pattern, and then he sees where all the mines were laid. And then he tells the guy how to walk out of it because he can see the grid pattern on the ground. He can access the internet through his head. And they're showing this on TV as something that isn't real and happening. But I got to tell you, folks, I'm beginning to wonder if they don't have stuff like that already. Now, not necessarily having that ability, but I am pretty sure they probably are putting chips in people's heads at some point or another, enhancing some sort of thought process. Now, whether it's through the eyes and seeing something or reading the internet, I don't know, but there's got to be something going on with that.
Well, they don't really need to use large implants, because so many people now have been laced with the bio API coming out of the chemtrails, along with the nanites and the vaccine. All of us that are here living on this planet anyway, have been already exposed to the mind control matrix.
I wonder, and I don't know much about it. Hey, Vinny, have you had a chemtrail expert on your show before?
Yeah, sure, yeah. Dan Wigington.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It seems to me that might be a little bit hit and miss as far as getting the nanites in the amount and the type of nanites they need to be able to do the type of things I'm talking about, which would set people apart to be able to have more strength or more intelligence or more, psychic ability or remote viewing capabilities or, whatever it is they're trying to build into a person. I believe those nanites would have to be pretty specific. Why would they waste them on a whole population?
Well, if you wanted to enslave the population because you had a whole lot of off-world people that required, a snack or something like that, a royal banquet, if you will, apples in everybody's mouth, you have the nanites to physically control them like a little walk like a nanite, and it'll be fantastic.
Well, yeah, but wouldn't that be like, wouldn't you go to the shelf and you'd say, okay, Nanite 1, this makes them all comply, go to the FEMA camp.
Lauren, I'm sorry, we're having some problems here. We're just going to reset and try and sort out these technical difficulties, ladies and gentlemen. That won't be a moment. We'll be right back. Back to hour number 3 of the most thrilling 3 hours in talk radio. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show. My very special guests are James Rink and Lorian Fenton. Sorry about the technical difficulties there, ladies and gentlemen, but as you can see, we are back and in living colour. Where do we go from here?
Well, you know, James, we haven't even touched upon what happened at the last Super Soldier Summit, and I don't want people to get the wrong idea, but I do want to let them know that no matter what we do in the Super Soldier world, mind control world, whatever you want to call it, the forces that be are always trying to thwart us at every turn. And believe me, folks, I'll be the first to tell you, I would never have thought this was happening. And all the way up until I got to Las Vegas for the summit, I didn't believe I was being targeted. That's how naive and foolish I want to forget all of that, you know, this stuff can get, how nefarious it can all be. And James, I'm going to go ahead and tell them the story leading up to getting to, we're actually in Henderson. I'm going to tell them the story about, well, it first started out about 4 months before the summit actually happened. I put up a website. I've been a web designer for about 20 years now, and I kept getting attacked, and I was getting attacked from places like, oh my God, China, Canada. I couldn't figure out who kept hacking into the site, and it was just terrible. I kept switching hosting services. I was doing all kinds of things. I was rebuilding the site about every 2 or 3 days. Nobody could buy a ticket, which was even more wild, and it was very difficult. People were calling me on the phone, and I'd have to take care of their PayPal, you know, do it myself. I mean, it was wild, folks. It was the hardest event I've ever put on, and I've been doing events for over 30 years in various ways and for different companies and big corporations and nonprofits and my art organization, and I've been doing this a long time. I never had that kind of problem. Okay, so we're moving down the road. It's now getting closer to the event. I get a show for us, an electronic harassment show on Coast to Coast AM. It's on the Wednesday night before the summit's going to happen on Friday. And I'm actually driving to Henderson from San Francisco, listening to the Coast to Coast show that I helped the producers put together. I had a whole bunch of people on there. Miles Johnson was included, and Derek Robinson from Freedom from Covert Harassment and Surveillance, and quite a few experiencers that have voice-to-skull communication going on and consider targeted individuals. And so they're all on this show. It's a wonderful show. Everything's going great. I finally had the website working, and I'm thinking to myself, well, geez, maybe I'll sell a few more tickets, because now I'm getting worried. You know, I'm barely making enough off of this to even pay for the hotel, let alone get everybody there and, you know, get them a hotel room and feed them and take care of them for the weekend. And so I get down to Button Willow, California, and here's where it gets interesting. And this is where I finally figured out they were harassing me. It takes me this long after, you know, months to finally admit to myself that they are harassing me. I get to Button Willow. There's two Motel 6s, and of course I don't have much money, so the only place I can say is a Motel 6. I choose the furthest away from the freeway Motel 6, thinking that's going to help me get some sleep. It's now 4 o'clock in the morning, and I bring in my computer, I set up, and I'm going to the website to make sure everything's okay, and of course the website is completely offline. There is no, I can't even find the website. I go to the hosting service, and it's not even there. I'm calling them, it's the middle of the night, and now here it's like 6 o'clock in the morning. I'm totally frustrated. My website has been hacked beyond hacked. It's now disappeared. And I'm just freaking out. So I thought, you know what? I'm going to sleep for 2 hours. I didn't even get into my pajamas. I only brought in my, you know, my toothbrush case and all that. I didn't even bring my clothes in because I knew I'd be hitting the road at 9 o'clock in the morning and wouldn't have time to even deal with all that. So, I lay down on the sheets with my clothes on. I close my eyes for an hour and a half, and then I get up at about 7:30. I decide I'm going to take a quick shower and get back on it and try to figure out what's going on with my computer and the website. Okay, so I jump in the shower, folks, and I get in there, and you wouldn't even believe this. All the water stops. Everything stops. The lights go out. I hear a spike in the electricity, and I'm thinking, oh my God, I hope my laptop is okay. That's the only thing I can think of at that point. And I realize that all the electricity's out in my room. And I've got a towel around me. I'm soaking wet. I got soap all over me. I look out of the door, and it turns out the whole place is down. There's no electricity in the whole building. And I'm like, what the heck is going on? So, you know, I rub the soap off of me. I throw my clothes back on, brush my teeth, comb my hair, grab my laptop, and I'm trying to get it to work. It's nothing. Nothing's happening. The battery's been fizzled. I don't know what's going on. And I finally say, oh, my God, I just got to get out of here, you know. And I thought to myself in that moment, my God, I wonder if this is all to get at me. You know, and finally I'm getting paranoid. I'm finally starting to get paranoid. I thought, oh, this is so weird. So I go up to the main office, and I'm trying to talk to the owner or manager of this Motel 6. And he will not talk to me when he's around his two employees. I can't figure out why he won't talk to me. I kept saying, what's the power? Why is the power out? And the girls kept looking at me funny, and then he walks me over to the side of the desk, away from everybody, and he says, look, you were told last night that the power was going to go out at 7 o'clock this morning. And I said, I was never told that. I didn't know anything about that. And he said, we told everybody. And I said, well, you didn't tell me. And he said, look, lady, I'm telling you, we told you last night that the power was going to be out. So here I am. I'm sitting in the lobby of this Motel 6. The girls are looking at me funny. And this guy's telling me that they were going to turn out the electricity. And I know darn well they never told me this. And he says, look, lady, the electricity's out in the whole town. So just get out of here. And I'm like, oh, this is so weird. And I get in my car and I start leaving town, and I notice that the Starbucks has light coming out of it. And I'm seeing people in there, and I thought, huh, that's weird. They don't look close to me. So I go in the Starbucks, and the girl says, oh, no, we have electricity. The whole town's lit up. There's no problem. And I'm thinking to myself, why just the hotel I was in? It's so weird. Okay, so then I thought, oh, cool, I'll just fix my website. So I get in there and I start to fix the website. And folks, oh my God, it was an 8-hour fix. I did not get into Henderson until about 12 hours later than I was supposed to. Long story short, I had two hacker friends of mine get in there and they traced all the hacks. And it turns out I was being hacked from Israel. And every time they go in and try to fix something, there would be somebody behind them messing it back up again. So I got two people on it so that one would fix, one would hack and try to destroy it, and the other one would go back behind him and clean that up. And we finally got the website working, but, you know, it was too late. So that was pretty wild. So, James, why don't you tell them what happened after that?
Didn't you have problems with the live stream at the actual...
Oh, yeah. Then it just got really ugly.
Because you were having trouble because the website was inaccessible. You were having trouble selling tickets, so you were suffering, you know, on the financial arm to begin with, and then but you were hoping to break even with this live stream event going on,
exactly.
And you had some kind of complications because I think the hotel couldn't support it, and then what happened?
Well, this is another intriguing situation. I bring in a TV crew from LA, and they called on Wednesday to the hotel. And all this time, folks, I'm telling the hotel girls that I have the contract with. Now, it doesn't state in the contract because they don't have a contract for this type of thing because it's not, you know, it's a normal thing people do, but it's just not written up in the contract. They have, you can purchase, internet bandwidth, and that was in the contract, but there was nothing about they had to have it there or anything like that. So I'm talking to them for months saying, I am going to live stream this event. Now, you guys know what I'm talking about, right? And, oh, yeah. And I said, that means I'm going to send a signal out of the building, not necessarily in, but we will have some people Skyping in. So I need enough bandwidth to go out and get people in. And I don't know how many MIPS that is for you guys, but we need to talk to the IT department and figure this all out ahead of time. And they said, fine. So I had the TV crew call the IT department that Wednesday and say, look, this is what we need. We need at least 4 MIPS up and at least 2 MIPS down, I think it was. And we've got to have that minimum to be able to do what we're going to do. And the guy at the IT department, Paul, says, oh, yeah, we have all that. We can get you 8 MIPS. We can get you 10. We can get you whatever you want. You just let me know and tell your person, whoever's got the contract, to pay the $150 for the extra bandwidth. And I said, okay, fine. Pay the $150 for the extra bandwidth. Everything's set. We get in there Friday night. The TV crew sets up. Everything's going okay. And then they get everything ready to go, and they couldn't connect. And it wouldn't go out. We couldn't get anything in. We couldn't get anything out.
Well, what did the hotel staff say?
Well, then it gets more complicated. Then we're trying to figure out what's going on. So we decide not to live stream on Friday night, which was fine. We were to start on Saturday morning. And they decide the hotel can't figure out what's going on. And they decide to bring in Cox, is the company they contract with for their hardwire and bandwidth. So Cox shows up. They're supposed to be there at 8 o'clock in the morning, their technicians. They show up at 10 when I'm supposed to be starting the conference. So we're now I have to hold the conference starting for another hour, which was just bad in unto itself. And they get in there and they start laughing at the TV guy and all my crew. And they said, look, you guys could never get that bandwidth. This hotel isn't wired for that bandwidth. This is probably the only hotel in the whole Las Vegas area that never upgraded to that type of bandwidth. He goes, yes, they can get things in at a very low bandwidth, but that's all they can do. They'll never be able to live stream unless they buy a $100,000 package and rewire the whole dang building. And so my crew's just freaking out because they're depending on getting paid from this money, and I'm depending on getting money so that we can, you know, break even at least. And it was just a horrific, horrific event. And
well, how come the people in the IT department, why they lie to you like that? Were they just incompetent? Were they lying?
Now, this is where, you know, you can either be paranoid, Vinny and James, or you can sit there and say people just didn't know what they were doing. After the pile of dominoes were building up about everything going wrong against me, I am starting to believe that somewhere along the line, somebody's powers that be were behind all this. I really do. And that is pretty paranoid, but I got to say, it was just like one thing after another. And that doesn't even touch upon the two or three people that were sent there to sabotage the event. We had a couple of stalkers. We had people that would come in and yell at the speakers. I mean, there were just some really odd that people that came under the guise of being there to help us and make sure the event went well, and it turned out they were there to sabotage the event. So that was very odd to me as well, because I've never had that happen in all the years I've been putting on UFO events. I mean, I get some people that are a little wacky coming to the UFO events that probably should be wearing tinfoil hats and are a little different and odd, but they never get up there and try to sabotage the whole event from happening. And so, anyhow, I just thought I'd share that with everybody.
So then you had a bunch of angry customers who already bought tickets for the live stream, and you couldn't do anything about that.
Yeah, that wasn't fun or pretty. We have solved all that. It took me about 4 months to be able to deal with all that, but it's all been taken care of. And you know what? I got to tell you, it may have had a lot to do with Cynthia Brewer. Cynthia Brewer is a very interesting woman. She is one of the first person that I've ever met to come out and say that her body was used to develop and grow a chimera, which is a combination of many different types of animals, and I believe human, that was grown in her thigh. And that they did some horrible, horrible experiments upon her. And she was really very controversial to bring to this event, but I thought her story needed to be told. Now, whether it's true or not is another whole issue, and I'm not going there about whether it's true or not. But I can tell you this, if her story is what she says it is, and I have a tendency to believe her after looking at all the material she has on it, that poor woman has been through an absolute horrendous, horrendous thing has been perpetrated upon her. And I wish more people would take up the mantle to help her in her life. She's doing pretty good now. Things are very well for her, but still she had to, you know, through two psychiatric hospitalizations, they've mangled her body. She has been amputated. Part of her buttocks and thigh were amputated, and some really horrific things have happened to her. And I'm just surprised that she isn't one of those people that's just, you know, permanently for the rest of their lives stuck in a nut house somewhere because of what they've done to her. She's a strong lady. She's very smart, and she's got her act together. So, you know, I just hope everybody looks into her story. It's Cindy Brewer. She's up on Project Camelot from the past. You can find out more information about her. But, man, I'm telling you, what an interesting, interesting presentation she gave to our audience. Well, it was fabulous.
I've interviewed her, too.
Oh, you interviewed her as well? Yeah, she's very intriguing.
James?
Yeah, I was about to say, some people's rooms were broken into. Their deadbolt locks were
Are we open. Going there, James? Are we going to go into all this? I guess we need to.
I mean,
let's do it. Let's do it. Okay. Now, I want to preface this again with, this only happened to some of the super soldiers and a few of the MyLab speakers. So it didn't happen to any of the attendees. It didn't happen to anybody there that was trying to seek help. It didn't happen to any of the targeted individuals that we know of. It didn't happen to any of the voice to skull communication, mind control people. It just happened to a very small group that seems to be the core group of the first Super Soldier Summit. And I'm going to say it, and that's all I'm going to say at this point about who was involved, because I really don't know who was all involved. And to be honest with you, I don't even know it really happened. But according to Melinda Leslie, who has very much, probably very much, that's not very good English, she has the best recall memory of any of the MyLabs people that I've interviewed in the last, you know, years about her abduction experiences from the government with the alien presence there with her. She remembers a lot. She's one of the few that has recall that is just phenomenal. So she woke up Sunday morning at the conference and said that she had been taken, and so had a small group of about 10 of us that were taken and taken down to the area where the trucks deliver items to the hotel, and that at that truck bay there were two Ryder trucks, and in the back of the two Ryder trucks were these three trip chairs, as you call them, James, where they do analysis of the people in the programs. And anyhow, three of them were in each truck, and there were two Ryder trucks with these items in them. We were taken by military. We were all drugged with a fast-acting type of scopolamine that only lasts for maybe 2 hours tops. And apparently, we were all taken down there, and we, you know, three at a time into each truck until they were done with us. It only took about an hour, and they take us back up to our rooms, put us back to bed, and we didn't know anything had happened. Now, this is what Melinda says, and I didn't believe any of this, James, at all for months and months. I mean, now it was in May, supposedly happened. Everybody was talking about it, and apparently one of the guys that was taking us out of our rooms that was part of the military that was perpetuating this upon us, perpetrating this upon us, broke the door locks. Is that right, Jim? Because I never saw him, James. I didn't see what had happened with these rooms, but
yeah, they're like the deadbolt lock in the hotel room.
Yeah,
they were like
apparently
busted open.
Yeah, they were broken in half, I think, because the guys started to go out of the rooms with us and forgot to undo them and pulled the door so hard it broke them in half or off their – or pulled their hinges out. That's what happened. Pulled the hinges out of the door, supposedly. Okay, now this is May. I'm hearing about all this on Sunday morning. I'm getting all these people come up to me, Jay, we were abducted last night and this all happened. I'm like, ah, you guys are all crazy, man. There's no way we got abducted. You guys nuts. I mean, that's basically what I told everybody. Because, you know, again, I'm very grounded. I don't believe a lot of this stuff happens. And I think, you know, that 90% of it is kind of out there, and that 10% of it may be true. And if even 1% of it's true, then we got a problem, and I need to, you know, help these guys deal with it. But in that moment, I'm like, nah, you guys are all crazy. So I go about my life, and things go on. It's now September. Melinda Leslie calls me on the phone one day, and she goes, Lorian, I heard that you, you know, don't believe this. And I said, well, no, I don't, but you tell me your story, what happened. So apparently, she had taken notes the next morning on Sunday, when, like she does a lot of times when she has an abduction experience, she'll make notes immediately. And so she made a whole page, you know, two or three pages of notes, and then kind of forgot about it for a while. And was, you know, she did talk to people on Sunday, and they were corroborating her story, but she didn't want to get her thought process about the whole thing polluted, so she asked people not to talk to her about it. And that was good. I thought that was very good. As a researcher, she's one of the best out there when it comes to that. She doesn't allow other people's experience to pollute hers until she actually gets the story out and interviews everybody that was involved in the scenario. So she calls me in September, and I start listening to this, and lo and behold, folks, I just couldn't even believe this was coming out of my mouth. She's talking about what the guys looked like, that and what kind of clothes they were wearing as they were taking us out of the room. And she says to me, yeah, the guy was wearing camo, desert camo pants. And then I said to her, and before she could even finish her sentence, I said, and a tan t-shirt, I saw dog tags, and he was wearing a hat that was the camo hat, just like the pants, but it's round, and it's got a flat top and a short bill. And she just went, oh my God, you're reading exactly what I wrote here. You know, to a T, exactly what I wrote. She goes, you must have seen it. You must remember this. Because why would you be telling me this, Lorian, if it wasn't in your head already? And I said, I don't know. But in that moment, folks, I went, oh my God, maybe this really did happen. I mean, or maybe they just put a big old mind chunk into all of us saying, this is a screen memory. We want you all to think it happened. So you have some more, you know, food for the fodder for the people who think you're all crazy. So who knows? And maybe I accessed it at that point. I don't know. But it's very intriguing, isn't it, James? Especially the part about the doors all being pulled, the two rooms that the hinges were pulled out of. I thought that was intriguing, too.
I remember waking up that morning feeling so tired, almost like I didn't get any sleep at all.
Yeah, so, well, I thought I didn't either because I woke up after only having 3 hours sleep. So I thought that, and I thought, this is weird. Even with only 3 hours sleep, I feel a little better than this. That was when my first thoughts getting out of bed. So, I don't know. You know, Vinny, we could all be just mind controlled to the point where where they're just implanting all kinds of thoughts.
Well, obviously they're not that good at mind control because I got a saying, how do you know you're under mind control? If you never question whether or not you're under mind control.
Ah, there you go. You know, and that is 99% of the population of the United States who sit in front of the boob tube all day long. They are so controlled. I can't even believe it. It blows my mind. You know,
just imagine, like, meanwhile, some television set in Texas, and you, hey, Jed, yeah, do you reckon we're under mind control?
God, that's hysterical. Well, that's a Far Side cartoon if I ever saw one.
Well, maybe. I don't know.
Oh, but seriously, folks, you know, I don't know what's going on. And there are days I just go, oh, this is all just nonsense. And I don't want anything to do with it again. And then some poor guy will give me a call and he'll say, look, I heard you were the lady to call because this blah, blah, blah has happened to me. And you know what? It's like, it's almost like hearing the same story out of everybody's mouth. It's like when you're talking about your baskets, it's like it goes from probability to, wow, I've heard that story 6 times and it's the same thing. How come they're all saying this to me?
Yeah, well, you know? Statistically, it takes seven different people specifically to say the same thing to you before you'll accept a radically different idea that you previously are unfounded for.
Ah, 7. Okay, I'm very close. I just need one more.
Yeah.
No, seriously, I've got about 5 or 6 people that have called me and said, blah, 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 and I'm not going to tell anybody about what they tell me because this is one of the ways that I can ferret out who's actually telling me an experience or a mind control situation that they've been involved in and the people that are actually just Looney Tunes and are calling me for attention. You know, because they're very different. If you've been in this for a long time, you finally realize that the mind-controlled people talk in a completely different way than the people that are Looney Tunes. And one of the things the mind-controlled and the super soldiers and the, you know, the satanic ritual abuse people and whatever else that have called me, the one thing they all have in common, and I will tell this to everybody, is that they do not want it to be happening to them. They hate every minute of it being perpetrated on them. All they want, and James will attest to this, is they just want to be left alone, and they want a house and a place to grow their own food and sit back and spend the rest of their lives in peace. They just want to be left alone. Most of them are penniless and homeless at the stage that they put you to the point where you're calling me. 90% of them live with their parents or a family relative or, you know, just somebody that is taking care of them just to give them a roof over their head. They are never wealthy. They never have any, you know, their teeth are usually rotting out of their heads and they're in bad shape. And I feel so sorry for them because now, this is where they put you.
Yeah, well, a lot of it is just the trauma. The emotional trauma prevents a lot of us from at least holding some kind of full-time gainful employment. So it's just,
yeah, but, you know, James, do you know how hard it is for anybody in this situation? You know. I mean, I don't know why I'm saying that to you. It is so hard for those type of people who understand that the evil cabal that run all these CEO corporation, you know, CEO driven, Illuminati driven corporations that in the long run are all managed by the 13, the Council of 13, which includes Bush and Cheney and you know, I can't remember all the names of them right now, but the point I'm trying to make is once your eyes are open and you know this is happening to you, the last thing you could ever do is go work for these people. It's just like, oh my God, that's like saying, okay, I'll go out and I'll slaughter a few more pigs because that's what they told me to do, you know. It's just terrible. It's just terrible. Once your eyes are open, it's so hard to live in this reality. I can't even
Lorian,
describe
it. Where do you see this movement going in the future? I mean, do you see these super soldier summits continuing on for many, many years? Do you see?
I don't know. I really, to be honest with you, I don't know, James.
Is there a ready supply of more super soldiers that are being chewed up and spit out for you to take care of?
No. And that's what's interesting is the ones that are older, that very few of them come to me, the older ones, because they are so programmed, a lot of them, that they're just so afraid. They think they can't get in a car and get to Las Vegas because they'll be killed, you know. And that the reality is, if they made their mind up and just said to the powers that be and said, this is what I'm doing and your fear does not bother me, go ahead and kill me, they'd be there in a heartbeat. And that's one of the things I try to teach all of them is, like, if you buy into their fear, if you buy into their paranoia, if you buy into anything that they're trying to do to you that keeps you away from the summit or seeing a therapist that can regress you or seeking a job that maybe you could do that you would love or going to school and bettering yourself or any of those things that they tell you you cannot do, you'd be okay. But it's a lot of work. Anyhow, my point to all this is a lot of the older ones will not come to the summit because they're afraid, okay? And the younger ones, I'm starting to realize, are just so programmed on a mass scale of less super soldierdom. I think the whole thing where they're training super soldiers to go fight our battles in maybe the secret space program or even the battles maybe here on Earth in this 3D reality, there aren't as many battles to be fought. And I think that they're thinking of a more mass programming. If you look at Hollywood and what they're churning out in Hollywood with all these starlets that came from Disney or even the singers like Beyonce and Lady Gaga and those type of people, I really think that they're the next wave of the super soldier in a whole new way, because that's how they're getting to the mass populace, is through the entertainer and the people who have 2 years of fame and have done something in that category. And they can get to them through TV. They can get to them through movies. They can get to people on a much more mass mind control level with that type of person, whereas the super soldiers, not sure. I just don't see it being as prolific as it once was. I think in the late 80s, 90s, and early aughts, that was more of the focus, but now I think it's on more mass mind control at a much subliminal level. Anyhow, that's just my take on it. I don't know.
It's almost like they like playing with your head. They get some kind of sick fascination, torture out of it, you know?
Well, I kind of see, Vinny, where it's heading is that social and political issues on a mass scale with everybody involved in it, they have two choices. They dumb you down and mind control you so you don't pay any attention to it, or you break free and you become people who listen to the Vinnie Eastwood show and go out there and protest and head for the Bilderbergers groups when they're there, or the World Trade Organization meetings when they're there, or what have you. And that they're winning. They're getting a bigger foothold of mind-controlling people so they don't ever wake up to the realities of our social systems.
I'd really love to go to a Bilderberg conference. I'd drag along like a massive barbecue set or something like that and make everybody their own Bilderberger, you know? Like, you can build it with the Monterey Jack cheese and the caramelized onions and the salad and the relish and the aioli
God.
Of that kind of stuff, you know? It'd be fantastic.
It would be fantastic.
I want a pineapple and bacon and avocado in that motherfucker.
Hate to say it, though. I'd have to bring chicken or a tofu burger.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, well, sure, absolutely. You know, we can crumb nugget that stuff, and maybe if we're lucky, we can capture one of the Bilderbergers and eat them too.
Oh, wouldn't that be fun? Yeah, a little cannibalism goes a long way to saving this planet.
Oh yeah, I mean, but of course you've got to use the right herbs and spices. You know, with the sage and rosemary. I'm sure Rockefeller rib roast would be freaking fantastic.
Well, I don't know. It'd be pretty tough, in my opinion. That guy's ancient, and he's probably all reptilian anyhow. So.
It might taste like evil. Like, I wonder what evil actually tastes like.
Well, iguana tastes like chicken. There you go.
Iguana tastes like chicken, so the evil reptilian overlords of this planet all taste like chicken. Oh, God, that's funny.
Well, I mean, they're harvesting a bunch of humans through their FEMA camps. They have these massive underground FEMA camps where they keep humans in cryogenics before sending them off for food consumption.
You know, James, I really don't want to believe that, but I've had some very interesting things happen to me in the last couple months. Some people that I've been dealing with for my MUFON groups, there were two or three of them that... I'm trying to get to speak at my UFO conference, and I'm not sure they're going to do it because they are very afraid of what they know. They swear to me that they were taken underground to these bases where they are actually killing people and eating them. And and they're some type of – they're not a gray and they're not a reptilian. They almost look like a cross between the two, and they're not – and they live underground on this planet. And this is just, you know, this first time I've ever heard of this.
Must be like the J-Rods that Dan Burish claimed that he was in contact with, because they look like they're called grails. They're like a hybrid of gray and reptilian. And they're like one of the nastiest ones on this planet. They don't have a soul consciousness.
Oh my God. Well, I thought Dan Burish was dealing with the little gray and he pushed him through the portal back to his dimension.
Well, those J-Rods were messing with his head. They were claiming that they were from the future, but they weren't. They were from here, this timeline, but they're just trying to manipulate him. Of course, I don't know if you realize.
Does Dan know this?
I don't know. I never talked to him about it.
Oh, okay. You know, he's one of the people. Vinny, have you ever had Dan Burish on your show?
No.
Oh, okay. Because he's a very controversial figure in the whole UFO, community. And very interesting guy, though. I don't know much about him. And that's interesting that you said that those J-Rods are not friendly, James. Because that's the first time I've ever heard that.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's what I was told anyway.
Oh, okay. So,
well, it's just something we hear. Like, all it is speculation and opinion and half-glimpse memories, and that's why it's so difficult to know what's even going on in this whole spectrum and theater. Now, as you guys were talking, I had a terrible thought. What if, just like every other weaponization program, they were sitting there just trying to weaponize mind control techniques for the usage of, you know, actually making mind control weapons? You know, being able to just, I don't know, make somebody suddenly turn into a mind control victim or something like that. Freak them with harp or something. They're trying to break down the human mind, find out what makes it tick so that they can turn the clock's wheels themselves.
Well, I actually agree with you on that, Vinny, and I think that's part of it. And I think the other part to the equation is transhumanism. One of the things that the MKUltra program, I believe, was brought out and started with was because of the 48 or 52 Eisenhower meeting with the aliens, supposedly, or maybe it was just the Roswell crash itself, if there were actually aliens there. But at some point in the 40s or 50s, an alien connected with a human being in our 3D reality and connected with them telepathically. And I think our government realized at that point that how do you deal with an entity that doesn't move its mouth or have to think its thoughts to say them verbally to communicate?
Porn with them?
Oh, God, that's funny. Anyhow, So I think they realized they were in big trouble, and the only way they were ever going to be able to deal with these guys is if they could be telepathic too. And I think that's how the MKUltra program actually started, was to start developing mind control techniques where we were actually all starting to talk to each other telepathically. I think it went horribly wrong. I think that they went off in different tangents and different directions. They were giving people drugs. They were, you know, doping people's water. They were spraying people. They were giving people diseases. I mean, they did everything they could think of to figure out ways for us to be able to be more telepathic. And I think it just all went awry. Then they probably realize, well, we can do this to people and we can make them do what we tell them to do just by sending a frequency at them. You know, in the 90s, or late 80s and early 90s, they figured out that every body has a frequency it resonates at. And if they can just beam a frequency at your head, you could be hearing voices talking to you. They could tell you to do things. Certain people would obey because they have a weak constitution in their mind not to believe that it's not Christ talking to them or whatever. And, you know, they realized they had a weapon, and that's exactly what you were saying. And I think that it went from one thing to help communicate with aliens to a whole different program that they thought, well, this is how we're going to control the population. And
so you come up with a great invention, and it's got like amazing effects. Let's say it's the heel fish or something like that. You know, you build it for a good reason, and the fish get better, and it's all good. But there's something about the tones or the frequencies or whatever the device that you're using, which somebody looks at and goes, how can I turn this into a weapon?
Exactly. Well, you know, they were using that type of weapon device back in the Gulf War. At least the Americans were. I remember the whole thing about beaming the weapon at them that made them nauseous and lose their bowel control. And they still have that weapon. I can't remember the name of it.
It's probably like involved EMF.
I thought there was like some kind of a microwave weapon mounted on a tank that they could like point at entire enemy squads and they'd just microwave them and they'd just explode from the inside.
Oh, my God. I haven't heard about that. my God. Just the thought of that makes my head swim. I can't even imagine doing that to people.
Oh, yeah. Just imagine actually feeling all your organs tearing themselves apart for a second or two before you explode in a cloud of dust and vaporized flesh.
Oh, God. Well, I do know that they use the one I talked about for sure because it's been written about in a lot of journals and military documents. And a lot of our guys came back and said, oh, yeah, it was just trippy that these guys, point these weapons, you know, these discs at them, and they'd shoot this beam out, and they'd triangulate it. Of course, they'd have one tank over here, one over here, and, you know, so they triangulate this area. And these guys would just kneel to the ground, holding their stomach, drop their weapons, put their arms up, and they just laid there until they got there. They didn't want to fight with them at all because that's how painful or how, you know, horrific the stomach ache and the cramping was.
Yeah, yeah. And you believe the microwave tank got discontinued and then KFC used it to make popcorn chicken.
Oh, dear. You know, Vinny, you're a wit. You just crack me up. I love being on your show. Thank you so much for having me here today. And James, too.
Well, thank you. That cracked me up, too.
Oh, God. Anyhow, sorry. So we're talking about
there's been several times when I've just got like my mic muted and I'm just in the background, you know. So.
Well, I'm trying to make light of a very horrible situation that I truly believe is happening. And I hope people are taking what I have to say and what James is saying, you know, serious to a point. I mean, you got to believe that something's going on. Like I said, I have no idea how much, and I have no idea whether I'm just being paranoid now in my old age about what they've done to me and my summits and what have you. But, you know, there's something going on, Vinny. I can't come on here and say to everybody definitively, yes, they're out to get me and this is why it's happening and blah, blah, blah. But I can tell you this, Like I said, I put on a lot of other events. I never had the problems I have putting on this conference. So far, though, I must say, I'm putting on the third one. The third one's going to happen May 30th, 31st, and June 1st in Las Vegas. So if you guys got discount tickets from there in Down Under Land and Kiwi Land, get on up here because it's going to be a very interesting conference this year. I've got Dr. John Hall, who's one of the – he was the hypnotherapist on the Jesse Ventura Mind Control show. Did you ever see that, Vinny?
I don't think I saw that episode, no.
Oh, it was a great episode. If you get a chance, do watch it because the people that were in that episode have been presenting at my conferences. And there are some really good people and very – they did the episode very scientifically. They didn't make them look like kooks like a lot of the shows do. And they really gave them a chance to voice what was going on in their lives as far as this mind control and voice-to-skull communication and targeted individuals and stuff that's happening to people. And Jesse did a great job. He was very, kept a straight face. Thank God for that. And, you know, was very intrigued about what was being done to these people. And I'm sure he felt, you know, a lot of sympathy for him. He sure acted like it on the show. But anyhow, Dr. John Hall was the therapist at the very beginning of the show, a hypnotherapist that told this guy, he hypnotized him. He kept telling people, yeah, it's so easy to make people do what you want them to do. You guys have no idea how easy our government has it. It's that easy. Here's what he did. He told this guy, you've got to limp. You're going to limp all the time. And so he put him under, told him he had a limp, took him out of it. The guy's walking around the office with a distinct limp. And the interviewer says to him, hey, what's wrong with your leg? And he looks down and says, nothing's wrong with my leg. And continues walking with a limp. And that's how controlled this guy's mind was to the fact that, no, there was no limp. And he was actually walking with the limp. So, and he didn't even know he was doing it. So that's how controlled they were. And then they took him out of it, and everything's back to normal. And they asked him, do you remember having the limp? He goes, I never had a limp. So if they can do that on TV, and it's real, and Dr. John Hall swears it was a real thing he did, and he does this type of thing all the time with people, you know, if they want a demonstration, you know, if he can do that, he says, what do you think our government can do? You know,
oh, they could do anything. They could turn straight men gay. They could turn gays into Mexicans. Oh, my goodness.
That's right. They could turn you into a reptilian.
I'd like to be turned into a Mexican, actually. That would be pretty cool.
Is it?
Yeah, you get your lowrider car and the whole bit with that, see?
Hey, do you know why lowriders have those little tiny steering wheels, man? It's because they're the only kind you can drive with handcuffs on.
Oh, God, I haven't heard that one before. That's great. Oh, dear. Now I'm going to be told that I'm racist, but I'm not really, folks. If he had said Italians, I would have laughed just the same.
Yeah. Oh. Hey, this is the Cheech Marin Appreciation Society, you know.
Exactly. Those two are wonderful together. I grew up on that. So, anyhow, I want people to know that we're not really a bunch of crazies running around here. You know, but we do have a good sense of humor, right, James?
Yeah. So come on out to the Super Soldier Summit right and there, yeah. Find out for yourself.
Yeah.
You like drama.
Yeah, well, I don't think that the attendees never did have the drama. It always seems to be me and you guys, you know, me and the kids.
Have you noticed that the drama? The people who have gone crazy are the ones who have really lost their sense of humor about things, eh? And either that or there's the other spectrum, the ones who just don't have a sense of humor, but they're still laughing at something all the time. And it's kind of creepy.
Yeah, those are the ones to be afraid of. And I got to tell you, a sense of humor has kept me happy, you know? I mean, if you don't have, like, just like you said, if you don't have a sense of humor with all this stuff going on around you, you'll never make it. You will end up in a loony bin. You will have issues. Or you will end up like the guy at the Naval Yard, he'll shooting people up. I mean, my God, that's so sad. You know, I think about that poor guy, and he reached out for help, and, you know, he tried, but it overwhelmed him, you know. He did get to the point where he actually did what they were telling him to do in his head. And I just, you know, it's like, I can't even imagine. And what bothers me the most about this, Vinny, is that people look at him and they think he's just crazy. And all the stories about him writing ELM or EMF on the butt of his gun and all that, people just laugh at this guy. They have no idea what kind of pain and anguish he was in because of our government doing that to him. And, you know, I mean, how do we get people to hear the truth, you know?
Well, I think that people basically have to experience something almost traumatic as the truth, or something really, really painful at least, before they'll be opened up to the possibility that this kind of stuff really does go on until they realize the world isn't all sunflowers and rainbows.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember the days I thought it was sunflowers and rainbows. I really liked it. There's nothing like being stupid or naive. There are many a days I wake up and I go, God, I wish I was still naive and didn't know the truth about all the horrible things going on in the world. But, you know, once your eyes are open, you can never close them again. And so if you're going to be out there, you might as well join the fray and help us all, you know, change the world. Right,
it's
Vinny?
Kind of like lucid dreaming. Like a friend of mine explained to me when he first started lucid dreaming, it was so real, it was so vivid, but he couldn't control anything. And then later on, he learned to realize that it's a dream and you can change things if you want.
Aha. Uh-huh. That's absolutely true. Hey, Vinny, do you think you're changing the world with your show and what you do?
Don't know for sure. I know I'm changing a lot of individuals' lives, whether or not that corresponds to the world. I don't know yet. I mean, how do you quantify changing the world? I mean, will the world have something different in place in the future because of what I have done and what I am doing? I think so, but it hasn't got it just all going as yet. But I'm part of something that is changing the world, I think, yeah.
Yeah, I think so too, and I think you're making a big dent. I think you're making a bigger dent than you think. Because your show is heard globally, and I think people do get what you're trying to do. And you do it with the comedy, and you also do it with your sincere, you know, Vinny Eastwood style behind it. And I think you're doing an amazing job, and I just want to thank you so much for doing it, you know?
Well, thank you. For my narcissism, yeah, this is very good stroking. Yeah.
Well, you know, the thing I'm finding out being a radio talk show host myself is that I've got 60 people on Revolution Radio where I'm at on Monday nights. I probably should plug that once, huh? Revolution Radio at Freedom Slips, like freedomslippingaway.com, Monday evenings, Pacific, USA, 5 p.m. Catch me if you can. And there are 60 people on our network. And, you know, it's really odd. Every network I go to, whether it's GCN or, you know, I can name a million networks. And you know this too. Most of them are driven by ego. It really isn't about the mission or about changing things or doing things. It's mostly about their ratings. I've never seen anything like it in my life. You know, it's the 15 minutes of fame thing I'm finally starting to realize. You know, it's not really getting the truth out there.
Oh, yeah, I totally agree. And a lot of network owners are like that too. And it's part of the reason why I've decided to remain independent for the time being and just sort of like gauge where I want my show to go and carve my own future out, because I'm done working for people. I'll only ever work with people. And, you know, I guess I just really want to help people because there's so many that have experienced so much pain and suffering and trauma. And nobody in the media will really give them the time of day, let alone a couple of hours. So, you know, I'm just, I guess the way that I operate in the world is the way everybody should, which is take personal responsibility for one issue inside which you can make a difference. And if everybody's doing that, then things are changing all the time for the better.
Exactly. And I think the whole internet craze of talk radio is really messing with the evil cabal. Because, you know, it started out with terrestrial radio with the people like Rush Limbaugh, and then we've gotten, you know, Glenn Beck and Sean Hannity, and Alex Jones has changed a lot. And I got to give him super kudos. I'm not sure he's playing on the same team as the rest of us right now, but hey, he did wake me up years ago and to the political and social problems that we have on this planet. And thank God for that, because if I hadn't had that little bit of background when this happened to me a few years ago, I would not have been able to distinguish that, yeah, this is related to that whole thing that they're doing with the government, and that we've got to be aware of the evil that's, it, you know, penetrating the U.S. I don't know about your country, but over here, things are just corrupt as heck. And what bothers me the most, Vinny, not about Alex or any of the guys out there, because, you know, they wake up the people that need to be woken up at the time they wake up. I mean, that they're still there for a purpose, and I got to give them credit for that. But what really bothers me the most is that the people in the United States have not figured out that there are only a couple of thousand people in the federal government at Washington, D.C., and that there are a billion, what is it, 6 billion people in America? I can't even remember. Maybe it's only millions, but there are so many of us here that we could surround the buildings, lock them in there, not feed them for 2 months, and they'd all be dead, and we wouldn't have to worry about them anymore. And that's the least I'd want to do to them. If I had my way, I'd have guillotines out there, take care of all of them, get rid of them all, and start all over from scratch. I mean, it's just amazing to me that people don't understand there's a small handful of people at the federal level telling us all what to do, and we're doing it. You know, we comply with the IRS. I mean, why? Just get rid of the IRS and get rid of the people heading it, and then you don't have it there anymore. You know, I mean, it's just amazing to me how duped the American public is. And it just upsets me daily, but I have other fish to fry, so I've got to deal with that first. I can't go out and be a political radical person right now, because I got to deal with my super soldiers at this point and the mind-controlled people, but anyhow.
It was quite funny, you just imagine this cartoon, you know, that super soldier family program I was talking to you about before, you know, in the... How in The Simpsons the family's all out of control, and it's the mother who's always running around, stressing out, sussing everybody out, you know?
Oh, yeah, exactly.
It'd be like a Woody Allen movie.
It would. I mean, I think somebody someday should do a documentary about all of us. I think they'd find it fascinating, but maybe they're the only ones. I don't know. So I don't know how much time we have left, but James, you did you have anything you needed to say before you check out on us here?
No, I'm just listening. I'm getting kind of drowsy here. Yeah, it's getting late. But I just want to thank you, Lori, and thank you, Vinny, for allowing to use your venue here to spread the message of a very important message that people need to know that this does go on. And, you know, we need to work together, unify, to bring about to educate people so that the younger generation and people, you know, looking forward in the future won't have to go through what we had to go through. And that's why I do what I do. Because I don't want other people to go through it.
Oh, James, you know what? We didn't even mention your blog site. You've got to tell people about it. Because, you know, folks, this is the most amazing blog site. There's a lot of interesting things on there. And what I tell everybody is that it is take it with a grain of salt. You know, you don't have to believe everything. And if you want to believe it, you can. If you want to believe just 1% of it, you can too. But you'll learn something there about the people that James interviews, especially on supersoldiertalk.com. .com.
Yeah, supersoldiertalk.com. And
there's some really interesting interviews. What are some recent ones that you've done?
Well, I just did one recently with Preston Nichols,
with the
Montauk Project. So, but that one hasn't been put up yet. I've also did some more another interview with Jay Essex and Barry Newkirk. Barry was allegedly Tesla in his past life, and so I was drilling him a bunch of questions and what do you think happened and all that. He doesn't have the same abilities in this life, but it's interesting nonetheless. And I actually have a connection with Barry. Apparently, in another past life that I had, I was a super soldier, incidentally, and I was programmed under heavy amounts of mind control, and I was sent off on a mission, and I went to this village where it was another planet where Barry and his family was, and I exterminated his family. So, but I think he forgives me because I was under mind control and I didn't really have a choice in the matter. But anyhow, it's just a little interesting story there.
You know, it's always fascinating to me about past life regression. I always find that extremely intriguing. I find some of your interviews on there really cool, and I hate to say it, a few of them I'm not quite sure about the people that you're interviewing, but heck, you know, they are intriguing and interesting, and never a dull moment on supersoldiertalk.com. I tell everybody to go there whenever they can if they want to find out more about what you've been up to lately. So,
There's another one. Yeah, there's another one I did. I went to Orlando to investigate the HG6 facility, which is where Heather Anderson of course, the Heather material, which was a put on Project Camelot. That's allegedly where the facility where she was stationed. And there's a bunch of, I mean, even above ground, there's a VA hospital and there's a prison. Might actually be in a military prison. Well, I'm not sure about that. Okay. But there was a Baptist church there. The whole area, the base itself is about 1 mile. Of course, it's underground base. 1 mile wide, about that, in a circle, let's see here, like a cylinder size shape. And the entrance, one of the entrances anyway, was this Baptist church. So here we are driving around filming, and it looks like the Stepford Wives, and we're all making jokes about going in the church to just investigate. Imagine, you know, what the expressions of these Bible believers. You know, I don't even think a lot of the members of the church even realize what's going on. But
of course not. Yeah, I mean, that's just par for the course. You know, they keep people mind controlled with religion and politics like you wouldn't even believe. That's just, you know, very much par for the course. Well, that's intriguing. I'll have to definitely check that out. So,
I was in that one. I was interviewing Ben Murphy, who was in contact with Heather before she died. And Ben has actually there was two assassination attempts on his life within like the past 6 months. Like one time,
dear.
Somebody actually shot him with a bullet, and he had a wound from that. He survived that. Then a bus almost ran him over. So apparently it's a group because he was connected to certain – well, I guess I probably shouldn't say that there, but
– yeah, yeah. You shouldn't talk about what people's affiliations are because they'll just get him in trouble.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so we won't do that. Now, I didn't know that Heather of the Heather Materials had died.
Yeah. Well, the story goes is that she – of course, she was a geneticist, engineer, and she didn't like because they gave her a command to exterminate these young. Because what Ben was telling me is that they were taking dead soldiers and reanimating them, and Heather was taking these reanimated bodies and augmenting them. Experimenting on them, trying to enhance their psychic ability, their strength, and so on. And she became attached to this, they called them units. And apparently they were placed for extermination because a new technology came online where they would take titanium bones and clone human flesh over them so they didn't need the others anymore. So Heather was just so disturbed of trying to – she actually claims that they took these bodies and so she claims that Merck, the pharmaceutical company Merck, would extract the omega-3 from these bodies and put them in their vitamins and sell it to the unsuspecting consumers.
Oh, okay. Now, I find that all a little far-fetched, but that's me. I'm always listening to you guys and going, okay. But the whole thing about her being a geneticist, I had heard about a woman that actually was a geneticist that was telling some very interesting tall tales like this. I don't know if her name was Heather, but she did claim that at some point they were working with trying to reanimate dead soldiers and use their brain potential. Very similar to the movie called 7 Minutes or 7 Seconds, where the guy, they were in his brain getting him to go analyze a crime scene, and he didn't realize that he was only, all that was left of his body pretty much was his brain working. And this is the type of thing that I...
It was a movie called Source Code.
Source Code, okay. I couldn't remember the name of it, and thank you for that, Vinny, but it basically... that they were going into these guys' brains and reanimating them, as you say, but very shortly after death, within minutes, not any length of time, and using that brain to try to see the world through their eyes, or try to see if they can actually use the brain to interface with other brains. So, you know, I thought that was all intriguing, and I hadn't heard any more about her. She was pretty well underground, and it was a group of ex, and I can't even say where they're from because I don't think I'm allowed to. But let's just put it this way. They know what they're talking about, and these guys don't lie to me. So, and if they tell me that this was happening, you know, like 8 years ago, I think is when I... they told me it was going on around 2001, 2002. That's not 8 years ago. That's quite a bit longer. It's about 11 years ago now. But yeah, so apparently they have been experimenting, and especially through groups at not Fort Detrick anymore, but other places that are underground bases that are positioned usually not within the United States boundaries. They're usually in other countries now. So I don't know if you've heard any of this, Vinny, but, you know, I've been hearing some very disturbing stories from people that are in the know. So anyhow.
Sorry.
Okay.
Not something I'm overly familiar with at this point.
Yeah, no, just some very wild stuff going on genetically. You know, ever since they cracked the DNA and the genome project and all that, things have gotten very wild. And, you know, the cloning bit, James, you talk about that quite often. I'm starting to believe that that's really going on, because more and more people are talking to me about it that are in the know, as they say. And I'm really seriously starting to consider it, whereas, you know, 6 months ago, I would have said, oh, this whole cloning thing's just, you know, big farce. But now I'm beginning to really wonder. So, anyhow. I don't know how much time we have left on the show.
You can end it any time you want.
Oh, okay. Well, James, do you want to say goodnight to everybody?
Yeah, but before I do, also, please visit my website, neologicaltech.com. To learn about meditation and how that can assist you. That's kind of like my other little modality that I do, because not only I try to focus on educating people about the super soldier stuff, I try to offer a venue for people to integrate as well.
And I must say it does work. I have my NeoCube on my desk, and I meditate every day with it, and I do feel like I'm getting some very good positive vibes out of my NeoCube. And in my story in the first hour of the show tonight, I was telling everybody about how I met James, and he was meditating with Bill Ryan over a NeoCube at the Awaken Aware conference, where my whole life changed. And maybe the NeoCube was the problem, James. Or maybe the solution. I don't know. But it all started that weekend with the NeoCubes and you and Max and Duncan and Aaron and the whole gang of you. So,
yeah. Well, the Neo device, while using it, what it does, it helps. It opens up an interdimensional portal, because everything that you can think of already exists in other timelines and dimensions and parallel realities. So all you have to do is just step into that. And the way you do that is through meditation. You have to you can open it up, of course, with your own pineal gland. You have crystals in that, because crystals are the key for opening up interdimensional portals. And the crystals in the cube can also do that as well. So it just enhances that ability to manifest or attract to you what it is you desire. or what gives you excitement in life. So it's a great tool. Of course, the ultimate goal of meditation is to help you relax.
Use it to get
girls? Creativity. Yeah, you could.
Oh, yeah. How about guys? I need a guy.
Yeah.
I haven't used it for that yet, James. I'll give you both a report on that at some point, okay?
I was talking with Dr. Victor H. Fisher, and he says that a woman can control a man. And I go, how's that, doctor? And he goes, well, she controls sex.
Ah, there you go. There you go. That's the answer to the universe right there.
I just made everything really uncomfortable just then, didn't I?
Well, you bring up sex and everybody kind of goes, huh? You know, it's one of those subjects that nobody wants to talk about, but everybody wants to have. Oh, let me tell you. You know, it's like, okay. Oh, anyhow. Well, Vinny, thanks for having us on tonight. It was wonderful. And I just want to leave everybody with these final thoughts. You know, I may be crazy. This all might not be true. But I am a pretty grounded person, and I got to tell you, things have really rocked and rolled for me for the last 2.5-3 years. And when you're 53, when this kind of thing starts happening to you, it makes you really question that it's got to be something going on. There has to be something going on, because I spent my whole life working. You know, I was an administrative director for a very large nonprofit in California. I've done work for Salesforce.com. I've done work for, I've been entrenched in the real world. And for this to happen to me, and for me even to be on this radio show 2.5-3 years later, talking about what has transpired for me, it's just, it's mind-boggling that it's even happening. So if it can happen to me, folks, it could happen to you too. Like tomorrow, you can wake up and go, all of a sudden, your mind is expanded to the point where you know all of this is real and you're just going, oh my God. So I do hope that I'm waking you up in some way, shape, or form. You know, it's all I can hope for, and let you know that for me, it's real. It's as real as the table I'm knocking on right now. And boy, I hope that everybody out there realizes that we have a battle on our hands, and it is truly for your soul. It's against the evil that runs this world. And the real key to it all in the end, which I didn't even get to tonight, is that love and love of everybody around you and love of the universe is truly going to be the answer to our salvation. And maybe on another show at another time, we'll get into all that. But that's it for me. So,
yeah, that was a lot better than an awkward sexual reference. Thank you. Right.
Well, thank you, Vinny. I really appreciate it. And James, thanks for coming on with me tonight. I really love it.
Yeah.
So thank you.
Thank you. Right.
Okay, now, ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much as well to you for listening to this little super soldier discussion-y thingy. What exactly do you call it? Who cares what you call it? It is what it is. And this is a listener-supported broadcast as well. So for broadcasts like this, where these people are able to come on and tell in the fullness their stories on a long-form interview format, please go to thevinnyeastwoodshow.com and start up a wee automatic payment, perhaps, because I'm always consistently getting on really amazing people who talk about some really amazing Shiite Muslim. Thank you very much for listening, and we'll see you again sometime, folks.
You are only exception. You